Mayo Entertainment Network. Broadcasting from Humidor 1A in the Cigar City of Tampa, Florida, USA. Welcome to the Cigar Dave Show, your weekly excursion into the world of cigars, spirits, and diversions. The cigar and pleasure-friendly hotlines are open. 877-DAVE-007. Now, fire up a cigar and pour yourself a cocktail. It's time for the General Cigar Dave.
After a long NFL season, we go from 32 teams down to two. And tomorrow it is Super Bowl LIII, or Super Bowl 53 in Hotlanta, Georgia. And this week on the Cigar Dave Show, we will, of course, be focusing our time and efforts on the Super Bowl in two manners. First up, later this hour, we'll be joined by one of the premier handicappers, football handicappers in the world, Bob Stoll of DrBobSports.com. In fact, the Vegas Sportsbook had to accommodate his picks because all of his winners were throwing the entire system out of whack. And then in the second hour, we'll be joined by Colonel Ange of the Western New York Theater of Operations in the very cold and frigid Pooch Pit for Super Snacks for Super Bowl as we get set for the finale of the National Football League season, the one time of year where no matter whether you are a sports fan or a football fan or not, it is one giant party. Long Ash greetings and salutations. A Long Ash snappy salute, semper delectatio, always pleasure. Long live the Alpha. Make America great again. Make masculinity great again. Screw the enemies of pleasure. It is your global five-star commanding general and Alpha Male in Chief from Command Center Alpha in the Cigar City of Tampa, Florida, USA. As always, don't forget, CigarDave.com is the website. You can email me, CigarDave at CigarDave.com. Follow me on Twitter at Cigar Dave Show. All the other social media links are listed in the upper right-hand corner. All right, we've got a lot to get to in this first half hour before we get to Dr. Bob, Bob Stoll of DrBobSports.com in the second half hour. And as you know, Gillette went after all of us that are alpha males, brandishing us all as being toxic masculine men. And we know nothing could be further than the truth. That ad backfired. And by the way, they're running that ad, Be the Best Man You Can Be, on the Super Bowl this coming Sunday. It is amongst the most disliked ads ever released on YouTube. I will guarantee you, for those people that have been living under a shell or a rock or hibernating the last 2 weeks and are not aware of the Gillette ad that basically bashed the entire male species, their prime consumers of their products, if they haven't stirred the pot yet, trust me, their sales will plummet even more after that ad. And I will tell you about the Schick Fusion 5 that I changed to one note on a comment I made last week in a positive manner. All right, first up, toxic masculinity. Men are being brandished one broad brush. We're all toxic. Men are evil. From the time men get out of the womb, we are just predators in waiting, sexual predators waiting to harass women, just boorish cretons. Nothing could be further than the truth, and I have two examples. First up, this comes to us down in Kylene, Texas. A Vietnam veteran, Joseph Walker, passed away of natural causes at the age of 72 last November. When the Central Texas State Veterans Cemetery announced funeral plans for him, they could not find any family since November. They put ads, they could not find any family, and they announced plans last week saying they didn't expect anyone other than the staff of the Texas Central Texas State Veterans Cemetery to be present. Well, media started to cover it, local media, national media, of his funeral. And what happened? Did he get 10, 20 people to show up? Was there 50 people, maybe 100 people on the high side? Again, people that didn't know this man, people that didn't know this veteran who served in Vietnam in the Army from 1964 until 1968. People did not know who he was. So would anybody show up? Well, yes. There were 1,000 people, predominantly men, alpha males, masculine men that showed up. There was an entire, I think, battalion from one of the Army outposts that showed up in uniform. Mark George of the Christian Motorcyclists Association, who officiated the funeral, said, "Today, we're not strangers. Today, we're family. This is our brother, Joseph Walker." A diverse turnout, young and old, people in suits and jeans, motorcycle jackets, just a total outpouring of respect from Kyleen, Texas, and beyond. And as people said, we do not leave veterans behind. What an incredible outpouring. And when you saw the pictures, 1,000 people, predominantly men that were there, rows and rows of people, rows of folding chairs, people stood to the pavement. In fact, photos of his funeral showed the road leading to the cemetery was bumper to bumper, clogged with cars of people that wanted to pay their respects. Is that an example of toxic masculinity, Gillette? No. That is an example of what I call classy, gentlemanly masculinity, alpha masculinity at its finest. But wait, as Ron Popeil would say, there's more. On this past Sunday's edition of the CBS Sunday Morning Show, correspondent Steve Hartman talked about the tale of Kathy Belt of Sandy, Utah, who has multiple sclerosis, MS, and it progressed to the point about 10 years ago that she could not get into bed without assistance. Here's a soundbite I want to play. I'm going to call it a list of 60 men. This is a perfect example that Gillette should have used instead of what they did, bashing men as being toxic, of saying this is what men are about. These 60-plus men, these are a perfect example of gentlemanly alpha males, of gentlemanly masculinity. Let's hit the soundbite. I'm going to call this a list of 60 men from Sunday's CBS this morning.
Kathy's miracle began about 10 years ago. Her MS had progressed to the point where she couldn't even get into bed. And since she lived alone, the only logical long-term solution seemed to be a nursing home. Until, one day, the guy next door came over and presented Kathy with a list. A list of about 60 men from the neighborhood who were willing to come over.
Hi, Kathy.
In teams of two to put Kathy to bed.
Take off her slippers, take off her socks. One guy gets on one side and one guy gets on the other side.
Three.
Lift her up, put her on the bed.
Now, the list started at 60 men. They have a problem today. There are far more men that have volunteered that they can actually slot in. So they try to get everybody in. Because men, gentlemanly, masculine men want to assist Kathy Belt, a woman who suffers from MS, help her get into bed. Gillette could have easily portrayed these men, because that's what being an alpha male is about. That's what being a gentlemanly alpha male is about. These are men that are going above and beyond for a neighbor. Totally volunteering. And now the problem is they have so many men, they can't squeeze them all in on the schedule to tuck Kathy in and help her get into bed every single night. So screw Gillette. Screw those feminists that portray all of us that are gentlemanly men, that are alpha males, that represent our gender in the highest possible light. That's what being a gentlemanly man, a man or an alpha male is all about. People that don't even know a veteran who passed away paying their respect. Thousands, 1,000 men showing up. 60 plus men initially on a list to volunteer to put a woman with MS into bed every night of the week, 365 days a year. Do we hear about that from Gillette? No. They're brilliant marketing people and gurus and MBAs decide, nope, let's go after the millennial men who, number one, don't shave that often, who think that by bashing all men, this is going to actually attract sales. Boy, talk about a major backfire. This is going to go down as the worst marketing campaign in the history of advertising, branding, and marketing. We played a soundbite last week from the CEO of P&G saying, well, we wanted to get the discussion going, and we think this is good. We knew we were going to get some backlash, but it's important we get the discussion going. You want to get the discussion going, Procter & Gamble and Gillette? Then why don't you start featuring exemplary men who go above and beyond? The men who go into buildings when there's a fire. The men, the first responders who climbed up the World Trade Center towers, even though they knew there was a good chance those towers were coming down or they weren't coming out. How about these men that unselfishly every night put a woman who can't get into bed herself because of MS, they go there every night? Why don't you feature them? Congratulations, Gillette. You have screwed the royal pooch. You've screwed your own customers, this one included. I got more email. I don't think I've ever had a story in the almost 24 years we've been conducting Cigar Dave Show broadcast maneuvers. I don't think I've received as much email on one single subject than on what Gillette did. And the fact that I'm boycotting Gillette, I have switched after being a 40-plus year Gillette consumer. I switched to Schick. I received several emails from mothers this week saying they buy razors for their 16-year-old, their 17, 18-year-old. They said, after we saw that commercial, enough's enough. We switched to Schick. We switched to Harry's or Dollar Shave Club. But I can tell you that the number of people that I have spoken to personally, friends of mine, that have said, I'm done with Gillette. I'm done. I'm going to vote with my wallet. I'm so insulted what they did, I'm done with them. Perfect example. Me, I switched to Schick. I bought the Schick Hydro 5. Now, last week I gave a glowing recommendation. It is now, I'm going on 11 days using the same blade. I am just stroking my face right now, and it is silky smooth like a baby's bottom. I cannot get over the fact that I'm getting a comfortable, close shave. The way that the Schick Hydro 5 head pivots, almost like a limbo dancer, it just goes all the way down. And it's just a very, very smooth shave. Now, last week I had one critique. I said, in my estimation, love the razor, more comfortable shave, love the lubricating strips. I'm getting the closest shave I've ever gotten, but I'm a little disappointed. One critique, I don't think that the edge trimmer that goes to shave your sideburns or trim your sideburns or around your nose and nostrils, it could be better. Well, this week I went and bought a second Schick Hydro 5 to put in my travel bag. Loved it so much. I'm not like Victor Kiam. I love the razor so much, I bought the company. Hey, I wouldn't mind doing that. Because I tell you, I think Schick's got a far superior product, far superior than any product Gillette has ever come up with. But unfortunately, Schick is kind of like Hunt's ketchup. There's Heinz, Hunt's, and everyone else. And now you've got Gillette, which has been the big gorilla, 70% market share, now down to 50. It's going to drop even further, mark my words. Schick's kind of like the second, but I'll tell you, Schick is making inroads. And when people try this razor, it's off the charts. So I buy the second Schick Hydro 5, and I'm looking at it, and I'm saying, wait a minute. I'm looking at the box, and I see a little blurb, and it said, our edge trimmer allows you to get around tight areas. And I'm thinking, edge trimmer, what are they talking about? And then they show a picture of how the edge trimmer works. Now, I have posted pictures on social media. We'll also put it on CigarDave.com and a video explaining how it works. When I saw the side of the box, I had a aha moment with my Schick Hydro 5. You actually take the top of the razor, the top lubricating strip, you put your thumb on it, and you press it back all the way. And then it clicks, and it reveals the five blades, and specifically the top blade, which allows you to get very, very close around your nose, the nostrils, around your sideburns, any other areas that you want to trim just a little bit tighter. I was blown away. I said, how did I miss this? So to Schick, my critique is this. Love the edge trimming blade. It works great, but you got to do a better job on the package to inform your new consumers about how it works. It was just a small little blurb. And in fact, Sergeant Steve has changed. Sergeant Steve, you have changed to the Schick Hydro 5, correct?
I have purchased it. I have not started using it yet, yes. I'm on the last couple blades.
Have you tried, have you used the method I showed on how to open up and reveal that edge trimmer?
Yes, after you told me about that this week, I did do that.
Would you have ever figured that unless I had told you? No way.
No. I would have missed it, too. I didn't look at the packaging. Who looks at the packaging?
I didn't look at the packaging. Right, exactly. I didn't.
Unless you make it big and bold and obvious.
And that's what they need to do is have a big graphic on the edge trimmer. That's very, very important. But phenomenal. So the edge trimmer discovery I've made, I rescind my criticism. The only critique that I have for Schick with their Hydro 5, do a better job on your packaging to inform your consumers about how that edge trimmer works. Okay. Howard Schultz. The former chairman, CEO of Starbucks, bought Starbucks when it was a one-store operation. Now he's a worth $3, $4 billion. Came from very, very modest beginnings. All right? Nobody starts or buys a business and said, gee, my goal is to take this one coffee shop and become a billionaire. I guarantee you, when he bought the first Starbucks from the original owners, he said, hey, my goal is try to make a nice living. Maybe I can open up a second or third or fourth store, put my kids through college, have a nice house, make a nice living. I guarantee you he didn't say, my goal is to become a billionaire. That's not how it works. I guarantee you Steve Jobs Steve Wozniak, when they started Apple, they didn't say, hey, we're going to become a multi-billion dollar company. Their thing was, hey, maybe we can make this computer and maybe people will like it and buy it and we can make ourselves a nice living. That's exactly what they thought. They became billionaires because people love their products. Pure and simple. Howard Schultz being criticized from the ultra left, number one for being a billionaire. People, Cortez saying it's immoral, and we shouldn't have billionaires, and they're not paying their fair share. So what? We should tell people, don't let your business be successful. We don't want to be successful. So once you get a certain point, just stop, even though people may love your product. Well, Howard Schultz was on CBS This Morning earlier this week, and here's what he had to reply with, and it's a very poignant question that he ends up asking. Hit it.
Well, you just played Senator Harris as saying she wants to abolish the insurance industry. That's not correct. That's not American. What's next? What industry are we going to abolish next? The coffee industry?
And the answer, Howard, is yes, the coffee industry. And I've said this before. If you don't even smoke cigars, I said they're coming after your cigars. And people would say, well, I don't smoke cigars, so I shouldn't be worried. And I said, you should be worried, because then they're going to come after your soda. They're going to come after your steak. They're coming after your coffee. All of those products they're coming after. Latest example, headline, 60% of coffee species found in the wild could soon go extinct, new research shows. Well, it's fabricated research, but they're trying to scare people using climate change as the background. They're going after meat. They're going after livestock, saying, We should all go to a vegan diet because eating all this meat contributes to climate change. A load of nonsense. So, Howard, are they coming after your coffee? The answer is yes. They started with your cigars. They're going after your steak. They went after your soda. They're going after your straws. And they will go after your coffee. Lastly, Colvin Cleaners. I'm going to play this real quick. Colvin Cleaners had an ad with Captain Paul's son, Chris. That's Super Bowl-centric. I want to play this ad. Love it.
What's up, everyone? I'm Chris Galani from Colvin Cleaners. I know the city of Buffalo and all of Bills Mafia are tired of seeing the Patriots
in the big game
every year. So we want to make sure you're ready for Sunday. So this week, if you bring any Buffalo Bills gear or any NFL items, you'll receive 50% off your entire order. So bring in all your normal clothes, one Bills sweatshirt, everything is 50% off. All LA Rams items this week will be cleaned for free. And if you're a Patriots fan, We'll still clean your stuff, but we're charging double, and all the sales are going to Jim Kelly's charity, the Kelly for Kids Foundation. So send in all your items and NFL gear to Colvin Cleaners on Elmwood, and remember, we are all Rams fans this Sunday.
I immediately called Captain Paul and said, I've got a Rams jersey. Do me a favor, send a plane down and pick up all my dry cleaning. So you got to love that about Captain Paul and Colvin Cleaners. Let's do a quick litation ceremony before we hit Bob's Stoll of DrBobSports.com at the bottom of the hour, handicapping the Super Bowl.
With an unlimited and secure supply of pleasure sticks available for the general to enjoy, it's time for National Cigar Litation Maneuvers.
Last week we had Jim Colucci of Sindicato on, and he made the announcement exclusively that in addition to being president of Sindicato, he is also assuming the president CEO title for Gurkha Cigars, and it's been a while since we've had a Sindicato. And one of the cigars we talked about was the Affinity, one of the first cigars they came out with, a nice mild to medium flavored cigar, Ecuadorian Connecticut wrapper, Nicaraguan binder, Dominican and Nicaraguan filler. I've got in front of me the Robusto, about a $6, $6.50 cigar. Fabulous cigar, that's what I will smoke today.
Cigar-altering and highly sharpened leaf-exposing device.
Self-sharpening double-edged stainless steel guillotine, and I also have my litation device, the Cigar Dave Mala Make America Litate Again. I'm going to go throttle up here. I'm going to cut the end of my Affinity Robusto. I'm going to gently toast the foot of this cigar. And as I do, this is a beautiful, mild-flavored cigar. Great draw. Very pleasant. Okay, I'm going to pour just a little bit of Bullet Bourbon in my snifter here. That'll be a nice accompaniment. Got my Bullet Bourbon. I've got my... And actually, the wrapper on this, the Affinity, reminds me of the gold in the Los Angeles Rams colors. They're blue and they're gold, and I'm rooting for the Rams. But we have the foremost football handicapper that is joining us right around the corner, Bob Stoll of DrBobSports.com. Fascinating gentleman. Been doing it for 20-plus years. We'll talk about betting on the Super Bowl and betting football in general around the corner.
You need to add some alpha to your Facebook news feed. By following the General, you'll get the latest intel in the world of cigars, info on the show each week, and see what the General is smoking. Click like at facebook.com/CigarDave.
In 1964, Jose O. Padron began rolling cigars bearing his name in modest surroundings with one guiding principle: always focus on quality, never on quantity. Nearly 40 years later, Padron cigars are recognized for their superior taste and majestic construction. The result of Padron controlling all aspects of the cigar-making process, including planting their own seeds, growing and curing their own tobacco, and constantly supervising the rolling room. To Wall Street, it is called vertical integration. To the Padron family, it's called making great cigars. The Padron lines include the Padron 1964 Anniversary Series and the Padron Traditional line. All Padron cigars are wrapped in Nicaraguan sun-grown Habano tobacco, available in natural or maduro. Experience Padron. For your Padron retailer, call 1-800-453-5635. When Padron is on the band, quality is a matter of family honor.
Surgeon General warning. Tobacco use increases the risk of infertility, stillbirth, and low birth weight.
The General is on fire today. He returns in 3 minutes.
two more minutes until Cigar Dave resumes hosting maneuvers. Cigar Dave returns to the mic in 1 minute. Cigar Dave is back in 5, 4, 3, 2.
We are just hours away from the start of Super Bowl 53 in Atlanta, culminating the end of a long NFL season. I'm not as depressed as normally because the Alliance of American Football starts next week, and then next year we'll have the XFL, so we'll have spring football that'll carry us until training camp of NFL. And as we get ready to watch the Super Bowl, in addition to Super Snacks for Super Bowl, probably one of the most wagered-on games in the world, the Super Bowl. And there's nobody better to talk about handicapping and the science and the sophistication behind proper wagering than one of the great names, somebody who's really revolutionized football handicapping and sports handicapping in general. Bob Stoll of DrBobSports.com joining us from San Francisco. And Bob, fascinating background you have. Interesting. First of all, you, just like me, both native Buffalonians, but you left, you told me, when you were 2 months old. So we have that in common in terms of being born in Buffalo, even though you live in California. But we have one other thing. I took two statistics classes in college. You, I believe, majored in statistics, correct?
That is correct. I took more than two.
Much more than two. But I learned enough about statistics in two classes to realize there are some really interesting mathematical equations and models that can be used in a variety of situations. And very interesting. Give us your background. You went to UC Berkeley and how you got into handicapping. Interesting story.
Yeah, I went to Berkeley. I think it was my freshman year. There was a football pool. I used to hang out at the bowling alley. Being from Buffalo, my dad was actually a semi-professional bowler, one of the best bowlers in Buffalo during his day. And so I grew up bowling. So I was hanging out at the bowling alley. The guy that ran the bowling alley had a football pool, an NFL pool, and it was $2 to get in, and you pick every game against the spread. Now, at this point, I had never even heard of a point spread, didn't know what it was, but I was intrigued, having been a football fan and a statistics guy. And I'd always crunched football numbers, for my own pleasure. And I thought, well, I'll come up with a little system and try to predict something. So that first week, I ran some numbers and came up with some formulas using the Pro Football Guide. And put my bets in. I think there were 14 games. I was 12-2 against the spread. My $2 landed me over $100 in winnings, and I was like, hey, this guy won the pool. The next week I did it again, and I came in second and won $40 more. And, you know, as a poor freshman, you know, I thought, this is interesting. So I just kind of got into it that way, and that kind of piqued my interest, and I started reading as much as I could about sports betting and some of the stuff I read. I was like, that might have some validity, and that's a bunch of crap. So, you know, I just sort of formed my own opinions and tested everything. If I had an opinion, I tried to do as much research as I could and started putting, you know, statistics into the mainframe down in the basement and in the math building at Berkeley, and, you know, sort of started fooling around with different ways to interpret the statistics and the math. And that's how it all started. And I actually, maybe a year later, I was betting my way through college, betting on sports.
And then you began your service. And, you know, one of the things that we've seen, all these handicapping tout sheets and call numbers way back, is stone cold locks, guaranteed win rate 70-80%. You're very honest. You're saying there is no way that that can happen. But a gambler and using mathematical models can actually make money and look at it as an investment rather than just simply throwing away money at a 55% win rate, which you've been averaging just about, I think, 58%, somewhere along those lines, which is on a year-in and year-out basis, phenomenal.
Yeah, in football. I mean, it's hard to do that in basketball. You're looking, you know, professional betting syndicates are trying to win 54% or 55%. And you can clean up doing that with the amount of games, you know, in basketball. And you just, you know, there's no such thing as a lock or a guarantee. I mean, in football, half of the games are determined by pure luck, whether it be fumbles, which are mostly random, kick return touchdowns, you know, and stuff like that. There's so many random things that go on that half of the spread decisions are purely luck. So if you're 100% perfect handicapper and pick every game, if you're on the right side of every single game, half of those games you'll win because you're on the right side. The other half, which are random, you'll win 25 and lose 25. So the best you could possibly do is 75% if you're a perfect handicapper, and there's no such thing. So the people that claim these, you know, 70%, 80% winners, it's just ridiculous. And there's just marketing to, you know, try to take advantage of unsophisticated gamblers who don't know any better. Like you said, my 58% in college football over the years and 58% more recently in the NFL, is as good as it gets long term. And, you know, 54-55% in basketball is about as good as it gets long term. And there are maybe, you know, the Wall Street Journal did an article on me, you know, years ago, and they had done some research on it. They said there's about 100 people in the world that can hit 55% in the long run. You know, so, you know, people that, and I hear all the time from unsophisticated gamblers, like 55%, well, that's not good. That doesn't even cover the juice. I was like, well, I don't know what kind of math you're doing, but if you're laying 110 odds, you need to win 11 and lose 10 to break even, which is 52.4%. The thing is, every percentage above 52.4 is 2.1% extra return on investment. So if you're a couple percentage points above that, all of a sudden it's, you know, you're 4.5% or 5% return on investment, and that's compounded. You don't have to wait a year to get your, you know, 4% or 5% ROI. You can compound that. That's why at 54-55% in a basketball season, you could, you know, make 50% of return on your bankroll using a fairly conservative money management scheme. And, you know, I have information on money management stuff on my site, as you know. But a lot of what I do is try to educate gamblers on the realities of sports betting. I like to say there are gamblers and there are investors. I want investors. And I try to turn gamblers into investors to think about it like that. There's no such thing as a lock. Even the best handicappers in the world have losing weeks, losing months, even losing seasons, just like the stock market has down years. But in the long run, you're going to make money in stocks, and you're going to make money, you know, if you know what you're doing and have someone at 55%, right, you're going to make money in the long run. You just have to manage your money well. And most novice gamblers don't manage their money well. They chase, or when, you know, they're winning, they think they're hot, and then they double up, or when they're down, they dump a lot on the Monday night game and they end up losing more. And it's just, you know, it's just bad money management. It really hurts people. Even if they're winning more than 50%, they're still going to lose more by just because they don't manage their money well.
Bob Stoll of DrBobSports.com, premier football handicapper really in the world, joins us as we get ready for Super Bowl 53 tomorrow. Interesting article, Bob, that the Wall Street Journal ran entitled The Man Who Shook Up Vegas on January 5th, 2007. And basically what was happening is when you would send out your picks to your subscribers on Thursday, the sports books would notice massive amounts of money coming in. And basically, they were at a disadvantage until they finally figured things out and they would adjust the lines. But it's fascinating that you were able, really, to move the market, per se.
Yeah, I still do. I mean, now I can't send emails anymore, and I can't wait till Thursday, because emails get to people at various times, and then the first people that get their emails, from what I understand, this has been back to a lot of the betting syndicates subscribed to my service, and they're betting big money, and when the bets come in, they bet them as soon as they can before the odds move, and so email is no longer a fair playing ground because some people get their emails faster than others, and the lines would move, and so now I do a text service where everybody instantaneously gets the bet at the same time, and within 30 seconds the markets move around the world, and it's not an exaggeration. People think that's a bunch of crap, but it's not. It's actual. I mean, I wish it didn't happen. I honestly wish the lines didn't move. It'd make my life a lot easier. Some clients, if they don't happen to be right on top of it, they get a worse number. But that's the reality of it. I mean, I have a lot of people betting a lot on the games I recommend, and the lines still move. But back then, they were moving, three or four points on a college game. And I bet something at -3, all of a sudden, it'd be -6.5. within a couple minutes.
That's a huge difference. That's a huge difference.
It's unbelievable.
Three
yeah.
to six and
yeah.
a half changes yeah. everything.
Yeah, and it no longer does it that much because people, you're eating up all your value. I mean, they just made it so anybody following me would just not have any value. And then it's tuned down a little, a lot since then. But still the lines do move, and it's a cat and mouse game. I mean, the syndicates now are releasing games earlier in the week to try to beat me to the soft numbers. And so I have to release games earlier in the week to try to beat them. In college basketball now, I have to release games at 6:30 a.m. Pacific time now, because the limits go up at 7, and that's when the syndicates want to bet the games. And a lot of those I'm on the same side of because we're doing the same good work. And we see the same value, and I'm just trying to get, release them earlier than, before the limits go up, before they hit them all. And now they're trying to beat me to it by betting overnight lines. And it's just constant. So I wish the lines did not move. I suppose it's flattering that they do, but it's a problem. And I try to do my best for my clients, but, sometimes they don't always get the best numbers.
Well, what many people do not realize about the line is the sports books or the online sites, they want to have an equal amount of bettors on each side of the line. So basically, because they're going to make money no matter what, but the key is you can't have everybody betting one side or the other. They have to keep it almost 50-50, and when they move that line, they're able to do that, correct?
Yeah, well, it's just not the amount of bets, it's the amount of money on each side. And you might find a situation where 70% of the people are betting, one side. And if it's mostly public action, the line might go the opposite way if this sharp, the sharp money's on the other side. And that often happens in the NFL, especially. It's a very, more amateurs, bet the NFL than other sports, especially the Super Bowl. And, generally the consensus side on the number of bets on a side is wrong because the public generally doesn't know what they're doing. The books sort of shade the line a little bit towards the public, in some instances to try to get the public to bite. I think you're seeing that on Super Bowl, honestly, with the line of 2.5. I think, the public's on New England, and
right.
that the sharp money will not be on New England. I guarantee that. They're hoping. I think, most of the syndicates are waiting for that line to get to 3, and by it may already be there, sometime on Sunday. I think that line could get through, but as soon as it does, all the sharp money is going to come in on the Rams, and it's going to drive it down. So we'll see. The public generally does not know what they're doing. And so you can see 70% of the bets on one side and the line going the other way, which is generally an indication that the public's going to lose.
Bob Scholl of DrBobSports.com, our guest as we talk to him from San Francisco. Bob, it was interesting, you're not a doctor, but that was your nickname, I think, what, in high school or college?
Well, yeah, I grew up in a minority neighborhood. I played basketball. I had a very, you know, sort of, you know, a street sort of style of play. And I moved my junior year of high school to a less diverse community, let's say. And I still had that sort of, you know, behind the back passes, reverse dunks, you know, a little bit more flashy style than my new coach preferred. I had one particular, actually, in my first, I was so nervous in my first game, I shot an air ball at the first shot I shot with my new team. So my first nickname was Air Bob at my new school, which was not flattering, but after a while I settled in and started doing some things that were, you know, I got the nickname Dr. Bob after Dr. J, who, you know, in the 80s.
Ah, okay, gotcha, there you go. Yeah, you know, Dr. Bob Sports sounds much better than Air Bob Sports, I got to tell you.
Air Bob Sports would not, yeah, that would not sell.
No, that does not work. So Bob, you brought up an interesting point. Right now the line is, I've seen -2.5 to -3 New England. Now, to me, looking at New England, again, without getting into any big analysis, you know, I look at the fact that New England's been there, that Belichick has adjusted. He's had 2 weeks to prepare for a relatively young quarterback. He got Brady and his whole crew that are very experienced. I look at that and say, I'm surprised the line isn't more along the lines of -4, -5, even maybe -6, but -2.5 to -3 seems pretty soft to me and seems like a good bet taking New England -2.5.
Yeah, there are some good points there. I mean, I think that, Belichick against a young quarterback, probably has some advantages. And the thing is, Jared Goff, and I went to Cal, and he's a Cal guy, and I've seen this, you know, from Goff. He's not good under pressure. He's not good when he's off script. So if everything is on time and he's got protection, he's very, very good. One of the best in the league when not being pressured. But when he is pressured, his numbers are in the bottom half of the league among quarterbacks. So what they're going to try to do is pressure him. Now, the Patriots do not have a superior defensive line, and what they've done the last couple weeks in the playoffs against the Chargers and Chiefs is they've used a variety of linebacker blitzes to, you know, to sort of get to the pass rusher. That might work more against Goff than it would against Mahomes, because Mahomes off script is dangerous. I mean, when he starts rolling out and doing stuff, you never know where he's going with the ball. So I think it could work more against Goff. And this is the one thing that's holding me back from really saying, hey, the Rams are a best bet. You need to play them. But the value is on the Rams. I mean, there's not a syndicate in the world that would have New England, I don't think. The numbers just don't back it up. And it might surprise people that, you know, in the 8 Super Bowls that Brady and Belichick have been in, they've been outscored in the Super Bowl. And they're, as a favorite in the Super Bowls with Brady and Belichick, they're 1-5 against the spread as a favorite. The only one they covered, they needed a 20-something point comeback against Atlanta and covered the spread in overtime with a touchdown. So really, they should be 0-6 against the spread in Super Bowls as a favorite. The one cover was the lucky overtime cover. So people love New England, and, you know, Belichick's always had extra time to prepare, and they're still terrible as a favorite in the Super Bowl. They've only won one Super Bowl by more than 3 points in regulation. They won by 4 points against Seattle, and Seattle was at the door, you know, about to score a touchdown and didn't hand the ball off to Lynch, you know, so they could have lost that game. And the other one they won by more than three was the overtime game against the Falcons. So, you know, the reputation New England has hasn't really played out in the Super Bowl. So, you know, and Sean McVay, he's a pretty smart guy too, and he's had extra time to prepare. So, you know, I could see your point, and I do think that's a concern, is that Goff is not good when he's off script. If they get to him, that would change it. That's the X factor, really. Because otherwise, I think the Rams are the better team. That is the one thing that concerns me, is that they get a pass rush on Goff, he gets off script and starts making mistakes, which he's proven to do. Except the Rams' offensive line is maybe the third best in the league at protecting the quarterback. So those blitzes are going to have to be pretty good. They have a veteran center, though, the Rams, you know, and they have 2 weeks to study the blitzes that they've been using in the playoffs. So they might have some of this figured out. by the time, you know, by the time the Super Bowl rolls around. So it's tough to say, but that is the concern. So I think you've nailed that part, but there's just no way that there's value on New England mathematically. So that's sort of the issue. You could look at it two ways. If you go purely by the math, the Rams are the side, no question about it, but there are some concerns.
Bob Stoll, DrBobSports.com. We will wrap up this hour right around the corner because I want to talk a little bit further about the Super Bowl and some of the exotic bets that you see. So we will continue talking Super Bowl 53 wagering right around the corner.
Get the latest cigars, hand-picked by the General, each month, delivered straight to your door. When you join the Cigar Dave Officers Club for just $22.95 a month, you'll receive three premium cigars in a customized Ziploc Cigar Dave pouch. To join, go to CigarDave.com.
America is under attack. Basic freedoms, privileges, and acts that we would normally take for granted are disappearing each day, including the simple ability to enjoy a cigar. This is Glenn Loop, Executive Director of Cigar Rights of America, CRA. At a time when elected officials should be thinking about education, public safety, and creating jobs, they are actually thinking about smoking bans, new taxes, and regulations of historic proportions on premium cigars. The cigars that provide us with pleasure, relaxation, and fellowship are under attack. We have to stop it. That's why Cigar Rights of America was created, to work for a new political day for cigar enthusiasts across America, to roll back restrictive laws and defeat onerous taxes and regulations that impact everyone from your local cigar shop to your personal humidor. For the price of a few great cigars, be a part of this effort to protect your right to enjoy a cigar without excessive taxation and cumbersome legislation. Go to CigarRights.org. Let's tell the government we've had enough. Join now, CigarRights.org.
Cigar connoisseurs and enthusiasts love going into their retailer's humidor and seeing what's new, what's exciting. It's like a kid in a candy store. And we've got a great way that you can enjoy and sample fabulous cigars from incredible manufacturers. It's the Cigar Dave Officers Club. Every month, you will receive three fantastic cigars in an Officers Club Ziploc pouch shipped directly to you for $22.95. Now, in the past year, we've had incredible selections. We had the World of Davidoff, which featured an Avo and a Davidoff Winston Churchill. We've had cigars from A.J. Fernandez, from Rocky Patel, from Plasencia Drew Estate, Sindicato Fonseca. Incredible cigars that you will love. Become a member of the Officers Club today. Join now. Go to CigarDave.com. Click on Officers Club. $22.95 per month gets you the latest and greatest in the world of cigars. You will absolutely love it.
Hold it right there. Cigar Dave is back in 2 minutes. The General resumes hosting maneuvers in 1 minute. Quiet, please. Cigar Dave returns in 5, 4, 3, 2.
Bob Scholes of DrBobSports.com joins us, one of the probably the premier football handicapper and as well as basketball in the world. And, Bob, first of all, a lot of people are going to be wagering on Super Bowl 53 that may not wager. You really should look at it as any other game during the course of the 16-week schedule. Don't blow your whole bankroll on one bet or one game, correct?
Yeah, I think that's what people, they say, oh, it's a big game, I'm going to put big money on it. And that's just a mistake. I mean, generally, the Super Bowl is not a game that you should be really betting on it if it were a normal game, because the line is so tight in the Super Bowl. And the odds makers are fully focused on this game. So, you know, unless you have really good reasons to be betting, you know, on it, you should just bet small, do it for entertainment. And I have, some prop bets that I think there's value on, and we can talk about those. But,
Yeah, we got about a minute 20. So go ahead and tell us, prop bets. You got any? Any worth doing?
Yeah, I do have a few, and I think these are pretty good bets. I like Julian Edelman under in receiving yards. Nickell Robey-Coleman, who, had that interference call that wasn't called in the championship game, he actually leads the league in fewest yards per cover snap allowed in the slot, and Edelman does all his work in the slot. So I think that's going to be – he's going to be neutralized a little bit. So I think Julian Edelman under in receiving yards is a good play. I think it's 79.5 the last time I looked. I do like Rob Gronkowski over in receiving yards. I think he's 54.5 over in receiving yards for Gronk, just because I think the receivers are going to be covered. And I think, as I said, Edelman has a tough matchup. So I think Gronkowski is going to be more of a open more often. I think they'll go to him more often. So Gronkowski over. And the other one I like also on New England's offense, Sonny Michel, over 17.5 rush attempts, if you can get that one. They've been using him a lot. He ran 29 times against the Chiefs. And I think the game plan is to run, because that's where the Rams are weakest defensively, is against the run. It'll slow down the pass rush, and they tend to play conservatively in the Super Bowl. So I think Sonny Michel over 17.5 rush attempts would be the other one.
Bob, I like all three of those. Bob, I appreciate you joining us. Fascinating. Can we get you before the NFL season next year for a little preview and maybe talk about wagering and do a little bit more in depth? We'd love to have you for the entire show.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Fantastic. Bob Stoll, DrBobSports.com. Check out the website. Tons of fascinating articles. He just gave you three great picks. Hour two of the Cigar Dave Show comes your way next.
Hour one of the Cigar Dave Show is now complete. There's time to refresh a cocktail as the General will return in 7 minutes.
News this hour from townhall.com, I'm Ron DeRockstra. On second thought, Virginia Governor Ralph Northam says he's not in the photo that appears on his medical school's yearbook page. It shows a person in blackface standing next to another dressed as a Klansman. Yesterday, he apologized for the photo, but after looking at it closely overnight, he says the photo is not him.
I looked at that photograph. Once I started thinking, I said, if I had dressed up like that, had put whatever was on that person's face and stood beside a costume of the KKK, I would remember that.
Democratic governor admitted the photo appeared as racist and offensive and asked for an opportunity to work to heal the damage he's caused, but he said he's not stepping down. Besides calls for him to resign, Kansas City Chiefs rookie quarterback Patrick Mahomes was named NFL's MVP tonight. He said he was fortunate to have great players surround him on offense.
I got to be on a team with a lot of playmakers that have helped excel my game and make me look really good on a daily basis. And then be able to go out there and just win football games in front of a passionate fan base.
Meanwhile, other award winners that were handed out on the night before the Super Bowl, Chicago Bears' Matt Nagy took home Coach of the Year honors. It was Giants running back Saquon Barkley who received Offensive Rookie of the Year recognition. Aaron Donald was the Defensive Player of the Year for the second straight year. Colts linebacker Darius Leonard, Defensive Rookie of the Year, and Colts quarterback Andrew Luck named the Comeback Player of the Year, an overwhelming favorite over Houston's J.J. Watt. Eagles defensive lineman Chris Long wins the Walter Payton NFL Man of the Year for his outstanding contributions to community service. More news, more analysis, both at townhall.com.
Hi, this is Alexander Green, Chief Investment Strategist for the Oxford Club. Just for a moment, I'd like you to picture the perfect stock. No doubt it would have hundreds of billions in revenue, more than IBM, Facebook, and Google. It would probably be a leader in cutting-edge technology like smartphones and robotics. It would be on the verge of dozens of blockbuster announcements. But most of all, it would be ultra-cheap, trading at less than $3 a share. Now, it may seem crazy that such a stock exists, but it does. It's a cutting-edge tech company that has made deals worth hundreds of millions of dollars with Nokia, Microsoft, and Cisco, and a $29.2 billion deal with Apple. It's set to create 50,000 new jobs right here in America, and Donald Trump even calls it the eighth wonder of the world. Yet you've likely never even heard of the stock. Why? Because it trades under a secret name. To find out why the secret $3 stock can help you retire, simply go to onestockretirement.com. That's onestockretirement.com.
President Trump's apparently convinced Taiwan's Foxconn company to go ahead and build a large manufacturing facility in southeastern Wisconsin.
After Foxconn Technology Group announced plans to abandon its massive Wisconsin plant project, President Trump got on the phone. And following those discussions, Foxconn changed course and said it will proceed with a manufacturing facility producing screens for small electronic devices. The president tweeted that it was great news for Wisconsin, where thousands of jobs will be created. Greg Clugston, Washington.
Toyota sold 10.59 million vehicles globally last year, fewer than the 10.83 delivered by German rival Volkswagen. U.S. automaker General Motors was the number one selling automaker for more than seven decades, before losing the title to Toyota in 2008. Its sales have shrunk in recent years. Breaking news and analysis at townhall.com. Pacific Gas and Electric Corporation spent nearly $10 million on California lobbying efforts in the year before the utility giant declared bankruptcy.
The majority of that money, more than $5 million, was spent for lobbying on proposals involving wildfire safety and response, including whether to reduce the strict liability utilities face when their equipment sparks wildfires. Lawmakers ultimately didn't reduce the liability. PG&E, the nation's largest utility, filed Chapter 11 bankruptcy Tuesday as it faces potentially tens of billions of dollars in liability from devastating wildfires that ripped through Northern California. The bankruptcy filing could lead to smaller payouts to wildfire victims. Patrick Frost reporting.
On February the 2nd, in 1943, the remainder of Nazi forces from the Battle of Stalingrad surrendered in a major victory for Soviets in World War II. More on these stories at townhall.com. I'm Ron DeRockstra.
This is AMEN, the Alpha Male Entertainment Network. In the cigar city of Tampa, Florida, USA. Welcome to the Cigar Dave Show, your weekly excursion into the world of cigars, spirits, and diversions. The cigar and pleasure-friendly hotlines are open. 877-DAVE-007. Now, fire up a cigar and pour yourself a cocktail. It's time for the General Cigar Dave.
This weekend, the big game has arrived. It is Super Bowl 53, or in Roman numerals, Super Bowl LIII. But for all of us that enjoy the big game, there's something more important. It is the one day of year where the entire nation, the entire country, almost the entire world, makes it a giant party. You may not even care about football. You may not like football. You may not even watch one game. But there is one time of year where everybody congregates and enjoys massive and copious amounts of delicious delicacies. Buffalo chicken wings, hot dogs, pizza, subs, sandwiches, beef on weck. The list goes on. And one thing is for certain. Sunday will be an absolute calorie fest, and we will celebrate it appropriately and give you the guidance you need as Alpha Males front and center today. On this hour of the Cigar Dave Show, we welcome you back, hour number two, wherever you may be. Cold week everywhere, about 70 or 80% of the United States, not cold here in the cigar city of Tampa. Nice and warm today, but one man that will withstand the elements, whether it is heat, rain, sleet, snow, blizzard-like conditions, or Arctic conditions, is our very own Colonel Ange, who joins us now from a not-too-frigid pooch pit in the Western New York Theater of Operations in Buffalo, although earlier this week it was most, subtropical, sub-sub-sub-subtropical. In fact, I think it was colder in Buffalo and Chicago and Minneapolis than it was in the North Pole, which is quite unusual. Colonel Ange, greetings, and happy Super Bowl 53 weekend.
Thank you, General. Long, shivering ashes as we warm up in the great white north.
Now, Colonel Ange, let me ask you a question, because I know you never go out into the pooch pit with your 8 to 10 grills and smokers unless you have a lit cigar in hand and a libation. So the question is, how long before the moisture in the cigar froze while you were outside earlier this week preparing the pooch pit?
Well, General, you have to be sure you tuck that double Corona deep in your pants before you go outside.
Not too far deep or it becomes a rectal thermometer, and that we do not want. And now the libation part, you got enough alcohol in there, you should be fine.
Yeah, and the good news is the ice cubes don't melt in the Bloody Mary.
That is correct. No dilution of the alcoholic libation whatsoever. Colonel Ange, let me ask you, how was it? I know I talked to Cigar Mother. Brutal, blizzard-like conditions. Normally, the lake effect snow comes off the lake and hits the South Towns at the Gary O'Brien's Pub down somewhere in the southern tier of Western New York with Lieutenant Gary and Mrs. Harem of One Gina. But it was the opposite this week. It was the city of Buffalo and the North Towns that got the brunt.
Yep, it was our turn, General. We got nailed just now finishing it all off. Probably a couple of feet of snow, at least that. Wind chills somewhere around minus 33. And now they're talking about the temperature here in the Queen City around 50 on Monday. So with the wind chill at a minus 33 yesterday, we're talking about an 80-degree warm-up, which in my mind, if that happened in Tampa, wouldn't it be 147 degrees on Monday?
That would be about right. That's a little too warm for us this time of year. It's nice. Today it's in the 60s, 70s. Earlier this week it was definitely in the 50s, 60s, morning cold. But as I tell people, no matter how cold it is here in the Cigar City, it is far colder in the rest of the country. And actually, being from Buffalo originally, I like the little bit of cool, chilly, crisp air here down in Florida. You get to wear a pullover. In fact, earlier this week, I had my Buffalo Bills pullover that I was wearing proudly. And I like the change. It's a nice change of temperature, a nice change of pace. And the nice thing is, we don't get the snow. We don't get the gray skies and the overcast conditions. Still get the blue skies with that nice, crisp temperature. And it's just very pleasant. It's a nice change of pace for us. Although, did you ever think, Colonel Ange, that you would look to the days of 0 to 10 degrees as being almost like tropical compared to minus 33 wind chills?
I mean, that's actually the way you look at it here. Everybody was relieved to find out that the wind chill is now somewhere around zero.
It's, I mean, yeah, I'm sure there are people in shorts already, breaking out the shorts and the short sleeve shirts, because compared to that sub-frigid, I mean, that polar, listen, even the polar bears is probably too cold for at the Buffalo Zoo.
General, I'm telling you what, it was so cold, they closed the nude beaches on Lake Erie this weekend. I mean, it's devastating for all of us here.
That is a good thing, Colonel Ange. I've seen some of the dames on Lake Erie. Not good. That's actually a good thing. Colonel Ange, let me ask you, how many times did you have to use the snowblower, or did Private G use the snowblower to clear out the pooch pit?
I had to use it twice every day since Tuesday. And Private G, we do not allow to run that type of heavy equipment, given his inability to focus. We could probably see the snowblower in somebody's living room window as it churns its way through an ottoman somewhere, and he looks at his phone. So,
I think you were talking about putting a pool in right behind the pooch pit. So think about it. If he keeps, using that snowblower intensely enough, you'll have a nice big hole ready to go for that pool this summer.
Yeah, as long as my insurance is paid up. I can't trust that kid with that kind of horsepower. Not yet.
Well, if there's any issues, call NFA. I know you got a contact over there.
There you go.
All right, Caroline, so tell us, in winter, what preparations, were there any additional preparations being so cold that you had to conduct for the pooch pit to make sure the grills and the smokers were okay and ready to be fired up? I know in Chicago they had to set fire to the train tracks with kerosene, light it on fire, or the contraction of the tracks would have been a big issue. Did you have to do anything to protect the smokers and the multiple grills in the pooch pit?
Well, what I've learned over the years is the best way to give it its own heat source from the outside. So what I have is a couple of propane tanks with the clamp-on heaters. You just hook them up to the propane tank, turn the heater on, give at least one heater for human consumption and the other heater blowing towards the smoker and the grills. And again, it's just because that temperature fluctuation changes everything when it comes to the time that you need to cook. So, yes, I do use those when it gets to be that kind of cold. Under freezing, we pull out the propane. The rest of it, above that, you can pretty much judge on your own how to keep it. But that's important. The other thing that's important, too, is that one of the grills is on a natural gas line. You want to make sure that you check that ahead of time. It can freeze. You don't want any cracks. If I do call NFA for help, I don't want it to be about the pooch pit.
That is correct. Now, one other question here. When you do get ready to fire those grills up, any certain precautions? I know you said the gas line, but, any of the other precautions that need to be taken after extreme cold weather?
Well, look where you have your grills, because remember, wherever that grill is, you're going to have a open space once the heat gets rolling. So, there could be water, there could be mud, there could be a mess around the grill. So what we do is we set all the grills up on a hard substance, usually concrete, and make sure that there is a substantial rug carpet someplace in front of it to wipe your feet and to keep the area dry. As long as they're high enough that they're above the snow, you should be okay. But that's really important. You know what? The whole thing is, other than the charcoal grill, the day before you're going to grill in this kind of weather, run everything. Run your lines, run your gas lines, make sure your smoker, just make sure all the lines are clear and that they maintain their temperature once you plug in where you want it to be. And, again, that could be difficult.
Colonel Ange joins us in the Pooch Pit from the Western New York Theater of Operations. Super snacks for Super Bowl today. Colonel Ange, when you preheat your grills, it definitely takes longer, or your fryer, if you're going to fry a turkey or whatever you may do, you got to anticipate the extra time to get that grill nice and heated up because of the sub-zero conditions.
Absolutely. One thing to keep in mind is it's not the same as grilling in July. You guys, you have to go out there, do it the day before, and then do it a couple hours before you're ready to start the process. Get out there, run them all, heat them up, make sure that everything is working, and it'll give you a good feel, too, for you know, what kind of heat you have and need to maintain. Honestly, General, the biggest thing is not so much just being cold, it's the wind. When the wind picks up, it changes the way your apparatus receives its air. It's how much longer it's going to take to cook. If you have a substantial sustained gust of wind, you may want to put up some sort of a lean-to or a pop-up tent or something just to keep the wind from coming from that direction in front of it. It makes a difference. The big difference is how long it takes to cook. That's what you have to look for, and the wind is your biggest enemy when it's cold.
Our alpha males are certainly very hardy. They can withstand it. The wussified betas, not so much. They're probably in the house with their mittens and their 10 layers on, but alphas, not a problem in any way, shape, or form. All right, before we get into food, got to talk about libations. Got to have the bar ready. So, Colonel Ange, I know when you have hosted Super Snacks for Super Bowl maneuvers at the Pooch Pit, you always have a fully stocked bar. What are the essentials?
Well, beginning, General, we always start out at the Pooch Pit with the same. Gin, Bloody Marys. That starts our day off. So we get a good quality. I know I've said in the past I appreciate a good London dry gin. Beefeaters, I like that. There are several. But we start with the Bloody Marys. That's how it goes off. And then we start working on what's to taste. Manhattans are always a big hit for Super Bowl Sunday. We get the Manhattan bar set up with our cherries, our dry vermouth, and our Canadian whiskey. We get that going. And then dinner time, there are those that do prefer to have some wines. We have selections of different kinds of wines, mostly Italian here. I wonder why. And then we have usually post-meal tastings, and Lieutenant Gary is really probably the best at that. He arrives with all kinds of after-dinner drinks, which we all set out. So the bar is set up ahead of time. Let them choose what they want, but for the most part, it's a Bloody Mary start made with gin.
It's a Bloody Mary Sunday to begin. And, of course, let's not forget, if Captain Paul is there, he's going to have his Bloody Marys, but he's going to have some beer as well. And I know that craft beer is always popular up at the Pooch Pit.
Yes, Captain Paul is big on his beer. We make sure that we have a selection of craft beers. In fact, we had Missouri Matt up for the holidays, and he's a big craft beer guy, as you know. So we make a run to the store, and we try and get some of New York State's best. I like to entertain with what comes closest, some of our favorites, like Hamburg Brewery, which always part of every show you do here, Southern Tier Brewery. We set up the craft beers. That's in a separate cooler. People are ready to go.
All right, now, you got the libations. The next thing, you need to start off with some fine delicacies. Not the main courses just yet. And Colonel Ange, nobody makes hors d'oeuvres and appetizers alpha style better than you.
Thank you, General. And you know my favorite go-to is to that, again, all kinds of entertaining, especially Big Sunday when you want to watch the game yourself. You want to be a part of the audience and part of spending time with your guests. If you have a smoker out there, your smoker is your best friend for appetizers. What I'm going to be doing is to set the smoker up. We're going to make some appetizers. We're going to have some moink balls, which I know you've had before. the.
And what are, let's talk about what the moink balls are.
They are a combination of moo and oink. Okay, we have cow and we have pig. We mix the ground meat. We then flavor it a little bit with some spices, not much. Get some cheese, cube the cheese in small cubes. Open up those little meatballs, wrap them around the cheese, toothpick in them, wrap them in bacon, put them in the smoker. Maybe about an hour at best, 20 minutes before, hit it with a little bit of barbecue sauce. So we have our moink balls. We also do the smoked poppers, jalapeno peppers, stuffed with three different cheeses, hit with a little bit of rub. Again, another toothpick, hold them still, wrap those in bacon. And in about the same amount of time it takes the moink balls, you have those, and you can pull those out, and you have appetizers to feed a crowd, and you didn't have to stand over a grill to do it.
Now, Colonel Ange, there is an appetizer delicacy that you make that is absolutely out of this world. It involves bacon, and they are your I call them your sizzling sweet bacon sticks. Let's talk about that, because a wonderful garnish into a libation and is a standalone hors d'oeuvre out of this world.
Thank you, General. We enjoy that a lot here. I make that, maybe once or twice a week in batches. It's called candied bacon. You take thick-cut bacon, and I hit it with my rub, and I hit it with maple syrup. You put it on a wire rack, let it set up, and then you smoke it for about maybe an hour, hour and a half tops. If you keep an eye on it, it'll get crisp. It'll have this wonderful smoky flavor. It's sweet, and I'm sorry, I left out one of the ingredients, cayenne pepper, so give you a little bit of heat. Now, that is the typical garnish for our Bloody Marys, but also it's great combination if I'm making some sliders, break it up, put them on top of the sliders. Everybody loves the candied bacon. That stuff usually goes faster than the liquor, believe it or not.
And the first time you gave one of those to me was probably about 3-4 years ago, and I had one, and initially you get nice sweet taste, nice and crispy on that bacon. And then all of a sudden, about 45 seconds later, there's this very delayed but rapid onset of some serious spice and heat.
Yep, it's great. That's what the cayenne does. So my recommendation for that is if you're going to do it, spend a little money, get a good thick-cut bacon. Also, a little bit more money, don't use the Aunt Jemima. Go out and buy some pure maple syrup, because that really does make a difference, and good quality cayenne pepper. Cautious with the cayenne, because, General, as you know, that heat comes roaring at you. You don't want to have too much. But it's a great flavor, good snack, appetizer, garnish, topping for just about anything. You can put it in tacos, put it on burgers. It goes pretty fast in this place.
Aunt Jemima and Log Cabin, I'm sorry, are not real syrup. They're, I think, 100% either sugar or... What do you call it?
Corn syrup.
Corn syrup, yeah. It's all artificial. I mean, when you taste real maple syrup, and I remember my grandfather's Cigar Abe used to take me out, because a lot of places in Western New York in the fall, the sap would be coming, you'd get the real thing. What a difference. I mean, it's night and day. I'll tell you what it is, Colonel Ange. It's the difference between having one of those gigundous, nice marinated and brine plumped up Colonel Ange buffalo style chicken wings, or one of those little chicken wings that you get from like Pizza Hut or Domino's that look like they came off chiclet. I mean, it's just night and day, and you hit it right on the head. You got to do the real maple syrup.
Yeah, you really do. And honestly, everybody talks about expense. It's not really that big of expense for the amount you use. I mean, you're not brining the bacon in this. You're brushing the bacon with this. So it's not going to break the bank, and you really do want the real thing. It cooks differently. I've seen it because I experimented with it a long time ago, where I actually used the corn syrup stuff, Aunt Jemima. What a huge difference. The flavor didn't even come close, but the worst part is because it was just almost pure sugar corn syrup, it darkened up really quick, and didn't really hold the smoke flavor. It just tasted, you know what? Tasted like burnt bacon.
But let's face it. If you did want to brine the bacon in the real maple syrup, I wouldn't have a problem with that.
Well, you almost are. You know, the difference between brining and just layering on the flavors with a brush is brining is you're submerging it and letting it sit for a long time. You really don't need to do that. There is enough maple syrup in that pan that it's going to almost cover the bacon. But again, it's really a nice, bright, light flavor. And as you said, General, around these parts, there's maple syrup everywhere. Almost everybody puts it out. Trick is with that, buy it fresh. Buy it fresh and use it as soon as you can because it's fresh and there's no preservatives, it'll only last about 3 weeks.
All right, so far we've got the sizzling sweet bacon sticks. We've got the moink balls. And next up, you need another hors d'oeuvre. And again, our alphas, we want it simple. We want it easy. So we've got about a minute and a half. Colonel Ange, give us the next item that our alphas should make for their super snacks for Super Bowl festivities.
Well, you know, what I also like to do, General, is get the smoker going and do something right in the smoker. So let me give you an easy one. Go out and buy. You don't even have to spend the money for this because it's going to be smoked. Go out and buy a bag of frozen cooked shrimp. Do it the same way. Get the shrimp, defrost the shrimp, hit it with a nice rub, wrap it in bacon, put a toothpick through to hold the bacon, put it in the smoker, and then if you're into the barbecue sauce, hit it with sauce. It's only going to take about 35 minutes to cook. Hit it with some sauce or not, bring it back out, hit it with some rub, and you've got shrimp on a stick.
Or as they say in a Chinese restaurant, shrimps. On a stick.
Shrimps. That's right. Shrimps.
But we know the correct, the singular or plural is shrimp, not shrimps. Although the betas, they don't know the difference. Colonel Ange from the Western New York Theater of Operations, the Pooch Pit, joins us in a somewhat warmer Pooch Pit. Definitely warmer compared to what it was with minus 30 degree wind chill factors earlier this week and blizzard-like snowy conditions. When we come back for our next segment, Super Snacks for Super Bowl, we'll get to some suggested main courses. Everything done on the grill, on the smoker, to enjoy the big game.
Check out the all-new CigarDave.com. Get info on the cigars and libations the General enjoys during the show. Get recipes from the Pooch Pit and drink cocktails, too. You can listen to the show on our 24/7 stream or download the latest podcast to listen to anytime. Get it all at CigarDave.com.
Hi, this is Rocky Patel. I'm here with my brother Nish and my cousin Nimish, and we're talking cigars. Guess what? They want me to vote on what my favorite cigar is. It's tough, but I'm going to go with the Decade. I love it. It's rich, decadent, and smooth.
Rocky, you know what? The Decade's a great cigar, but the 15th anniversary, that's the cigar. That celebrated your 15 years in business, and I got to tell you, it's my favorite.
You know what, Nish and Rocky, you both are wrong. The best cigar is Freedom by Rocky Patel. This cigar delivers a lot of spice, a lot of flavor, and in my opinion, it's the best cigar we make.
As usual, we can't agree. But guess what? There's a great cigar for everyone. I promise you, nobody works harder than we do to make you a great quality cigar. Come visit us at RockyPatel.com.
Surgeon General warning, cigars are not a safe alternative to cigarettes.
The General returns in 3 minutes.
Cigar Dave is back in just 2 minutes. Minute, and Cigar Dave will return to the mic. The Cigar Dave Show resumes in 5, 4, 3, 2.
Exclusive CBS coverage of Super Bowl 53 as I do it in my master's voice and as I prepare for the Masters. Not far here from Atlanta down in Augusta, and I'm getting my knee pads ready as I get ready to kiss the ass of the current president of Augusta National.
Well, we are ready for, forget Jim Nance for a second. I'm going to do it more Tony Romo style with more enthusiasm than Jim Nance. Super snacks for Super Bowl 53. Front and center today, Colonel Ange joins us from the Pooch Pit in a classified location in the Western New York Theater of Operations. It has warmed up. Anything compared to minus 30 is warm. Can't go much lower than that. That's the good news, Colonel Ange. I mean, like, yes. Minus 30, minus 33 is about the floor. You can't get about any colder. Theoretically, you could, but highly unlikely. Now, Colonel Ange, we talked about some great starters, great hors d'oeuvres, great appetizers. Now we've got to go to the main course. Colonel Ange, I have been a wing connoisseur for many years, being from Buffalo. I have tasted and feasted wings across the globe, but I have never, ever tasted wings as succulent, as juicy, as large, and as meaty as your Colonel Ange Buffalo chicken wings. What is the secret?
Thank you, General. We're proud of that. At the Pooch Pit, serve those every football Sunday, regardless of who's playing. And it's a 2-day process, and it's very simple, easy thing to do. But give it 2 days. What I do is I buy full chicken wings. I don't buy the little tiny small ones. Buy regular-sized chicken wings.
No pigeon wings.
You know what? We could do it with pigeon wings. I bet they'd still plump up.
Too small.
Okay. So we get the wings. I take them. First thing I do is brine them. I think that's important to do that. That's going to do two things. It is going to plump them up, which is what you like, General. Makes them a little bit bigger, but also keeps the moisture inside the meat so they don't dry out. So we brine them with kosher salt, a little apple cider, water, and brown sugar. They need about 4 hours in that concoction. You take them out, you rinse them, and the reason you rinse them is because of the amount of salt. Later on, we're going to use some rub, and we don't want them to be too salty. So rinse them after you're done brining them. Then set up a wire rack on a sheet pan. Dust the wings with a good rub. If you have your own, great. If not, there are great rubs out there. Look for a good poultry rub. One of my favorites is the Zero to Hero rub. That works on just about anything. Easier, make your own. Hit them with a little bit of oil first. Toss them with some oil so that the rub will stay on. Dust them with the rub. Put them skin side up in the refrigerator on the wire rack, uncovered, for 24 hours. That's the secret. What happens is you are double marinating the wings. First of all, with the brine that does have the brown sugar in it that has the apple cider or apple juice. Now you've got the rub, which is going to set on the skin. Because it's nothing worse than having rubbery skin. The salt in the rub will help dry it out. So overnight, then bring the wings out at least an hour before you're ready to cook them. Don't worry about any cross-contamination. These wings will be cooked to perfection. Take them out, let them hit room temperature. Then what I do is put them in a smoker. You get the smoker up to around 240 because, again, you're trying to keep the skin as crisp as you can. Smoke them for about an hour and a half. Before they're done, 30 minutes beforehand, double-check. Run a meat thermometer in there. See where the temperature is. Ideally, I know everybody says it's 165, but these are chicken wings. You really want them a little bit past that. I like to get mine up to 180. So I take them out around 175. Then I take them to finish them off. I grill them. Get your grill going, medium direct heat. Toss them on the grill and brush them with wing sauce. Not barbecue sauce. If you want buffalo wings, you either get Anchor Bar, make your own with hot sauce and butter, a little vinegar. Toss them. They only need 2-3 minutes. And the beauty about this is, while they're in the smoker, you're not fussing with them. Again, this is all about having fun and enjoying the game. They're in the smoker. You're not fooling with them. If they've run their time, you can cut the heat on the smoker. It'll just keep them warm when you're ready. 2 minutes on one side, 2 minutes on the other. Brush them with the wing sauce, and you have got smoked, grilled buffalo wings. A big favorite here, General.
Well, and I can tell you that when you put them in the smoker, it is so much different than when they're fried. Just the flavor that comes out, the taste, and the way you brine them and put them in overnight in the refrigerator. I remember when I came to the Pooch Pit and you took me downstairs to the basement and you opened up your refrigerator and there were racks and racks of wings. I was shocked. I mean, these looked like giant drumsticks off a chicken compared to wings. These were humongous.
Yeah, they're great. You know, and again, we call the fridge in the basement the meat locker. We love to put them in the meat locker. And it does. They plump up. The water from the brine makes them do that. And you just give them some time. Honestly, to me, even if you're on the road and you're going to go, you could smoke these things before you even leave. If you were going to a tailgate, smoke them in the morning, throw them in a aluminum pan, cover them up, finish them on the grill. They travel great. People love them. They're one of the big fan favorites here. We love them.
All right, one more time, Colonel Ange, in terms of the smoker, temperature and how long? I know we both have the same master-built electric smoker, so give me a temperature and a time.
Well, what I use these days is a natural gas smoker, but it can you do them in anything. What you're looking for, you don't want too low. You don't want 225 on this because you really want the heat to crisp up the skin. Try and hit them around 240 to 250, which almost every smoker will give you 250 degrees, and you need about an hour and a half. Check them again after an hour. Take a look at an hour. Run a instant read thermometer in them and shoot for a finished temp of about 175 to 180. And remember, temperature in anything you take off a grill or a smoker is going to rise by about 5 degrees. So if you're looking for 175, if they're 170, take them out. I know Butcher Dave and I, when he does his road trips catering, the Butcher Dave traveling grill and smoker, we do exactly the same thing. We smoke them, and when they're close, We bring them out, we let them sit, and then we finish them off on the grill. So 250, hour and a half. But check them after that first hour.
And you will never be able to buy wings the way Colonel Ange makes them, between the smoke, the brining, the smoker, finishing them off on the grill at any restaurant. That I can guarantee you. So follow Colonel Ange's recipe. And we will stick that up at CigarDave.com. It's actually pretty easy. And I think we've got some pictures from a previous Super Snack show as well. Now, Colonel Ange, we got to go to some main entrees. We got the wings. And that's going to carry us for probably about 15 minutes or so. But then we're going to be – and remember, the pregame show goes, I think, about 4.5 days now. Or at least it seems like that. So we need enough entree and enough food to carry us through to the big game when it finally arrives. So next up, in honor of the Los Angeles Rams, you have a special entree.
Well, you know, General, you and I and Sergeant Steve and just about everybody listening to this show couldn't find 7 things to eat in Los Angeles because it's all made with stuff that either comes out of the ground or is molded into something else like tofu. But one of the things that they're famous for in Los Angeles are tacos. I'm going to make tacos, and I'm going to make them with short ribs, smoked short rib tacos.
Smoked short rib tacos. I love short ribs.
Oh, they smoke up just great, General. What you do is I make a rub. It's a little. It's different from my other rubs because I want it to be a little bit more Latin or Mexican in flavor. I use paprika, salt, coriander, onion powder, garlic powder. I put a little bit of dark roast coffee, ancho chili powder, and poblano pepper powder. So now that's the rub. You take the short ribs. You trim them up, try and get a good amount of the fat off the bones and clean them. Take and hit them with the rub and then put them in the smoker. You want your smoker, again, probably around 240. This isn't going to be the typical Brady Fisher, 210, 211, 220, because you really want to get these things warmed up quick. Put them in the smoker. Typically, I use oak. For this, for my hardwood, I use oak with a little bit of pecan. Nice, even flavor. The oak gives you that traditional flavor, and the pecan is really good with beef. Take them, smoke them. It's going to take you probably, I'm going to guess, depending on the size of the short ribs, about 2 to 3 hours. When they're done, check them for the temperature. This is a meat product. You really want it to come out around 125, somewhere around there. It'll rise, maybe 120, because it'll rise to 125. Then shred the short ribs. Take 2 forks, shred it up, put that in a bowl, and then assemble your tacos. We take corn tortillas. I brush them with oil. I put them on the grill. You give them about 2 minutes on each side. Take them out, and then you dress them up the way you like them. I like mine with cilantro. A lime crema, which is sour cream and lime juice, some fresh cilantro, and then whatever else anybody likes. You want cheese, fine, but I'll tell you what. I don't like, other than hamburgers, I don't like cheese on my beef. So I leave that off. Makes a nice little taco, and it's short ribs, baby. It's almost a Texas taco instead of an L.A. Ram taco.
Now, Colonel Ange, let me take issue with something. You don't like cheese on your beef. Let's talk about the Big Ange Burger, which you can never go wrong with at any cookout or any time of year, and especially during Super Bowl, Super Snacks for Super Bowl. The Big Ange Burger, cheese is a key ingredient in the way that it is prepared.
General, I said, other than a hamburger.
Oh, I missed it. Sorry about that.
That's all right.
Other than a hamburger. Okay, gotcha. Gotcha.
Yeah,
I was so enamored with what you were talking about, the short ribs and preparing it, I kind of missed that. So I stand corrected. But let's talk about the Big Ange Burger while we're on it. You know, today, every restaurant you see talks about their stuffed burgers and gourmet burgers, and there's 488 burger joints in the United States. I mean, there's Burger Fi, Smash Burger, Burger This, Burger That, Five Star Burger, Five Guys Burger, Four Guys Burger, 28 and a Half Guys Burger. Everywhere you go, there's one of the, I mean, how many burger places can America sustain without saying, all right, enough's enough? But none of those places make the Big Ange Burger the way you do. Every other burger is puny compared to the Big Ange Burger, and that's obviously in honor of Big Ange, your father. You told me that was created in 1968, and it is still going strong today.
Yeah, think about that when you go and order a stuffed burger someplace. That while that's really hot stuff, my father, Big Ange, who cooked, you know, all the men in my family cooked, but he saved his cooking for weekends. And on Sundays, he made meat the balls, but on Saturdays, he would make his Big Ange burger. He would take a combination of beef with a little bit of pork. It's probably one-third to two-thirds, two-thirds beef, one-third pork, kind of almost a meatball combination. And then he would make a large patty, probably, well, not a pound, maybe about three-quarters of a pound. These days, what they do is they separate the patties so that you layer one on the other. Big Ange didn't have time for that. He would take the burger, make it, and then he would stuff it with provolone, with some crispy bacon, and some Parmesan, and then seal the burger up, and then grill the burger. After he's done grilling, before it was done, he would top it again with provolone, make sure all that provolone melted, and serve it on a hamburger roll. With him, it was with marinara sauce. For me, it was with ketchup. But he was making stuffed burgers in 1968. I think he lost out to the chicken wing by a year. I think they were 1967.
64.
Ah, well, then that's it. He missed them by
64, 4 years. 4 years prior to that. And by the way, you may be able to hear the canine security detail of Pendragon's Royal Baron in the background chomping on a bone. When you started talking about the Big Ange burger, he went right to town on that bone. And by the way, he's smashing, destroying that bone because I wrote Belichick, Brady, and Patriots on the bone, and he is going to town on it.
If you have one extra of those, General, send it over because the super sniffer Toby would love to chew on that. He's said to me flat out he doesn't want to see the Patriots in another Super Bowl. Tough break.
Who does? Except people in New England. Who does? Nobody.
The Portuguese princess.
That's it. 95% of America has become a huge Rams fan. All right, finally, let's talk about a entree in honor of the Patriots. Not in a great way, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, you know, my honor for the Patriots has always been, like yours, General, a dishonor. Respectfully, we'd like to make something here, which we will have on Super Bowl Sunday. I call it Brady's Full of Bologna Sandwich. Now, we've done this once or twice before, but it's a great way to serve bologna, and we all know that Brady's full of bologna, and we all know that the way to make Tom's eyes twinkle is to shine a flashlight in his ear. What I do is I buy a full bologna, which you can get at any supermarket. You just tell them to go in the back and bring one out. Usually they come 4 or 5 pounds. Take and have your special tool, which has been checked at several security, TSA security checkpoints, General, as I traveled back and forth to Tampa. You want a piece of pipe, copper PVC, but copper works better. It's about 2.5 inches in diameter and about a foot long. Stand the bologna up on end, run the pipe through there, and pull it out so you're essentially coring the bologna. Take that bologna and take cheddar cheese, some barbecue sauce, cut the cheese into tiny cubes so that you can manipulate them better. Put them inside the hole that you made in the bologna. Go back to your pipe. Pull out what came out, make 2 plugs, and put one on each end, put toothpicks in both so that it'll hold the cheese and the sauce. Next thing we do is I take Weber's mustard, I coat that bologna in mustard, and then I hit it with my homemade barbecue rub. I let it sit until the Rub sets. Now, that doesn't take overnight. That takes maybe an hour, maybe two. And remember, bologna's fully cooked, so it doesn't have to go back in the fridge. Just let it sit on a wire rack. Set up your smoker. This time, probably around 225, maybe 230. Put the bologna inside the smoker, and you're going to need to smoke that for about 3 hours. About an hour and a half, flip it over, make sure it's getting all kinds of smoke. My favorite smoke for the bologna would be, once again, oak is a base, but then I would use a fruit wood, probably apple. Let that smoke, give it the full 3 hours to do that. While the bologna's cooking, get yourself a couple of white onions, peel them, coat them with a little bit of olive oil, cut them in half, and then grill them. Grill them both sides. They probably need 10 minutes before the bologna's out. Slice those that onion into thick slices, trying to keep the rings together as best as you can. Once the bologna has come out, let it rest for 10 minutes. Then I cut it into very thick slices, maybe not 2 inches, inch and a half slice. Take those slices, put them on a medium grill, direct heat. Just give them a flip, 1 minute, 2 minutes tops per side. You don't want to lose the cheese that's in the middle, so be careful.
Colonel Ange, you got 20 seconds. Wrap it up.
That's it. Then you put them on a nice big hamburger roll, barbecue sauce, and you got Brady's full of bologna sandwich.
And when I first saw it, I had no idea what you're doing with that pipe, but it all came into crystal clear focus, and we've got the pictures and recipes. Super snacks for Super Bowl. Colonel Ange, enjoy the big game on Sunday. Lieutenants and fellow alphas, the final and concluding segment of this Super Snacks for Super Bowl edition of the Cigar Dave Show comes your way next.
The General is always on Twitter, delivering breaking news, giving you the latest intel on cigars, and battling the enemies of pleasure. Chat with the General now at Cigar Dave Show.
In 1964, Jose O. Padron began rolling cigars wearing his name in modest surroundings with one guiding principle: always focus on quality, never on quantity. Nearly 40 years later, Padron cigars are recognized for their superior taste and majestic construction. The result of Padron controlling all aspects of the cigar-making process, including planting their own seeds, growing and curing their own tobacco, and constantly supervising the rolling room. To Wall Street, it is called vertical integration. To the Padron family, it's called making great cigars. The Padron lines include the Padron 1964 Anniversary Series and the Padron Traditional line. All Padron cigars are wrapped in Nicaraguan sun-grown Habano tobacco, available in natural or maduro. Experience Padron. For your Padron retailer, call 1-800-453-5635. When Padron is on the band, quality is a matter of family honor.
Surgeon General warning. Tobacco use increases the risk of infertility, stillbirth, and low birth weight.
Cigar connoisseurs and enthusiasts love going into their retailer's humidor and seeing what's new, what's exciting. It's like a kid in a candy store. And we've got a great way that you can enjoy and sample fabulous cigars from incredible manufacturers. It's the Cigar Dave Officers Club. Every month, you will receive three fantastic cigars in an Officers Club Ziploc pouch shipped directly to you for $22.95. Now, in the past year, we've had incredible selections. We had the World of Davidoff, which featured an Avo and a Davidoff Winston Churchill. We've had cigars from A.J. Fernandez, from Rocky Patel, from Plasencia Drew Estate, Sindicato Fonseca. Incredible cigars that you will love. Become a member of the Officers Club today. Join now. Go to CigarDave.com. Click on Officers Club. $22.95 per month gets you the latest and greatest in the world of cigars. You will absolutely love it.
Hold it right there. Cigar Dave is back in 2 minutes.
The General resumes hosting maneuvers in 1 minute. Quiet, please. Cigar Dave returns in 5, 4, 3, 2.
The culmination of a long season, and there shall be no frozen tundra at Mercedes-Benz Stadium in Atlanta, Georgia, as the Rams and the Patriots do battle. Now, we have discussed with Bob Stoll of DrBobSports.com various prop bets. He gave out 3 good ones. I like them all. And we talked about whether or not to take the Patriots or the Rams. So here's my prediction. My heart says Rams, Rams, Rams. America says Rams, Rams, Rams. If the bet, if the line stays at -2.5, I take the Patriots. If it goes to -3, I go to the Los Angeles Rams. I want the Rams to win. And I also want all of you to enjoy fantastic super snacks for Super Bowl. Enjoy the big game with great cigars, great libations, great delicacies. Do so safely. Cigar Dave, the General, saying, Mayor Humidor always be full. Mayor Cutter always be sharp. Mayor Ashby, extra, extra long. Semper Delectatio. Always pleasure. Long live the Alpha. Make America great again. Make masculinity great again. Screw the enemies of pleasure. For the sake of every Buffalo Bills fan and every other anti-Patriots fan, go Los Angeles Rams.
That concludes today's live Cigar Dave show. Stay tuned as the replay will begin momentarily. Sit back, relax, and light up a cigar.
News this hour from townhall.com. I'm Ron DeRockstra. Virginia Governor Ralph Northam has vowed to remain in office despite widespread calls for his resignation after a racist photo surfaced in his yearbook page from more than 30 years ago. We get the latest from correspondent Ken Lorman in Washington.
Northam said at a news conference that he had prematurely apologized for appearing in a picture of a person in blackface and another wearing a Ku Klux Klan outfit. That photo appeared in his 1984 medical school yearbook. The Democratic governor says that he, in fact, was not in the photo and had never even seen the yearbook until Friday.
Northam's refusal to resign signals a potential bruising fight between himself and the former supporters. Leaders in both parties and both Virginia senators repeatedly urging Northam to resign, saying that he's lost the public trust. A day after the Trump administration pulled the plug on decades-old nuclear arms treaty with Russia, President Putin says Moscow itself will vacate the INF pact. Former presidential adviser Sebastian Gorka agrees with Mr. Trump's decision.
The fact is the INF treaty is a legacy of the Cold War. Russia has been in flagrant breach of it in Kaliningrad for numerous years. China is not a party to it. It had to change, or we had to leave. The president made the right decision.
Gorka is the host of America First with Sebastian Gorka, heard on the Salem Radio Network. The United Nations announced today a peace deal has been reached between Central African Republic government and 14 armed groups after their first ever direct dialogue aimed at ending years of conflict. The agreement represents rare hope for the impoverished landlocked nation, where interreligious and intercommunal fighting has been continuing since 2013. News and analysis at townhall.com.
Free offer contingent on subscription. Pay shipping and handling. Cancel anytime.
What happened? You used to go hours without visiting the bathroom. Now it seems like you're constantly getting up to go, and you're even getting up at night to go. This is not okay. Listen, the makers of Super Beta Prostate, the number one prostate formula, are introducing a new wonder pill, Super Beta Prostate P3 Advanced, with three key ingredients that are great for your prostate. To celebrate, we're sending free bottles to men who want to cut down on bathroom trips. Yes, your first 30-day supply is free. Call 1-800-459-3174. Early research suggests that an ingredient in P3 Advanced may help support a normal prostate size. Combine that with a reduction in bathroom trips, and you have a formula you'd be crazy not to try. Get P3 Advanced free. Call 1-800-459-3174. 1-800-459-3174. 1-800-459-3174.
The three football fans who've attended every Super Bowl for the last 52 years are going to keep their streak alive this year.
Don Christman, Gregory Eaton, and Tom Henschel have reunited in Atlanta for Super Bowl 53. They're the last surviving members of the Never Miss a Super Bowl club, the only known fans who have attended every Super Bowl since 1967. Christman is a Patriots fan, hoping that his team will tie Henschel's Steelers for the franchise record of 6 Super Bowl wins. Eden's Detroit Lions remain one of the last teams in the NFL who have yet to compete in a Super Bowl. As for ticket prices, Super Bowl I was between $6 and $12 a seat. Now those same seats run from $2,000 to $3,000. George Bonzani reporting.
Chicago Bears coach Matt Nagy named the 2018 NFL Coach of the Year. Chiefs rookie quarterback Patrick Mahomes named the Offensive Player of the Year. More at townhall.com. Authorities say a Louisiana police officer was killed after being hit while riding a motorcycle as part of a funeral procession.
The Baton Rouge Police Department said 31-year-old Corporal Shane Totti died from his injury shortly after the Friday afternoon wreck. But they say a pickup truck crashed into Totti, who was escorting a funeral procession. The department says Totti was a 4-year veteran of the force. The crash is under investigation. Authorities have not identified the driver of the truck or said whether charges will be filed. Patrick Frost reporting.
Members of the clergy are not the only trusted leaders coming under scrutiny these days amid charges of sexual misconduct. Complaints of impropriety are continuing to mount in state legislatures as the 2019 sessions begin. Since the start of 2017, the Associated Press has tallied at least 90 lawmakers who've resigned or been expelled, faced other repercussions, or been publicly accused of sexual misconduct. More on these stories at townhall.com. I'm Ron DeRockstra.
Seconds. Enjoy. from the Fox News Radio Studios in New York City. Fresh off the set of Fox and Friends, it's America's receptive voice, Brian Kilmeade.
Wow. Hi, everybody. It's Brian Kilmeade. Thanks so much for listening, and I really appreciate this hour we're about to have. From the minute I heard he was writing a book to the time I heard we were getting him as an interview and they were able to give me the book over the weekend. So as I was traveling to San Antonio, I was lucky enough to host Battle at the Border. I said, for my 8-hour journey, I could get through Governor Chris Christie's book. Can you get it to me? To get Chris, this was under lock and key.
It was.
Oh, it was unbelievable.
Oh, yeah.
In the e-book that I got, because I'm too cool to carry around books.
Sure.
It says Brian Kilmeade only in the background, where it was almost distracting.
Yes, on every page. Yep.
What are you so worried about?
It wasn't me. It was the publisher. Yeah, they weren't messing around. They wanted to embargo this thing, and they were embargoing it. That's it.
Wow. Let Me Finish is the name of the book. Trump, the Kushner's Bannon, New Jersey, and the Power of In-Your-Face Politics. Chris Christie tells a story about this ongoing story, not only his life story, but the Trump story from a perspective that he had. So for you, Governor, I break my format. Instead of talking about the three big topics, I'm blowing it off to get right
Beautiful.
To it. First off, I loved it.
Thank you.
Right? And I really loved it. And I'm going to start in one of the beginning points. I wrote the book, The Games Do Count, because for those of us, like me and you, who don't go pro,
yep.
but who believe that we played sports like there was no tomorrow, and then you kind of look around after college, and I go, I wasted my time. I was obsessed with soccer. I was an average Division II soccer player. Did I waste my time? Because I wasn't a star. My yep. last year, I did not play. My first 2 years, I did. And I go, wow, all my friends are walking out with the accolades and the championships and certificates. That I waste my time. But not having that much success allowed me to do better in this business. I'm reading your story. You were better at catcher than I was at soccer in high school. But what happened to you?
Well, what happened to me was in my senior year, I had started in my junior year, and we had a very good team. And our senior year, we were going to have an even better team. And a guy who I had been friends with for years in elementary school left to go to private school. We used to walk to school together, to elementary school in the beginning of junior high. He left to go to private school. He was a catcher also, and he's a very good player. And he went to a private school, and when he and his father figured out how great our team was going to be my senior year, he transferred back. And all of a sudden, now I'm on the bench. And I had some of my friends who were telling me, screw this, quit.
You're the captain.
Right? I was captain of the team, and you know, but I decided not to. And it was the best decision I ever made because it taught me about real adversity. You know, when you're 17 years old, like you said, that's the center of your universe. Like,
it's your self-esteem came from.
Totally. And, you know, and I've been playing baseball with these same guys since I was 8 years old. And this was our last year together. And for me to have to sit on the bench was tough, but what it taught me was that I could contribute in other ways. And it also taught me that when you get knocked down, you get up.
Yep.
You get up. And I think, you know, you see as a theme through the book, my life in politics was not a straight upward line either.
Right.
But people say, how do you put up with some of the stuff you've put up with? It's because all my life I've been taught, knock down, get up.
Right.
Get up. Real men get up.
And what you did is you did get up. You learned you're not going to play a perfect game. You didn't win that one,
nope.
but you worked through it, and you were proud of what you did.
Totally.
And by the way, he was probably better than you, right?
He was better than me.
Yeah, and it's tough when you look at it and go, well, you know what?
He's better.
He's better.
He got drafted. I mean, to show how much better he was, I mean, he got drafted by the Cleveland Indians that year straight out of high school. So, you know, he was a very, very good player. And I'd tell you how good that team was because you're a sports guy. On that team, the starting nine, six of the starting nine either played Division I baseball or played professional baseball.
Wow.
Drafted in professional
so
baseball.
So it was legitimate. Yeah. So
28-2. It was a good team.
I was in the town of Massapequa when soccer wasn't hot, but all these immigrants came here. Like New Jersey, you guys had a hotbed too.
Exactly.
With Tony Miola and John Harkes.
Yep.
And these guys went to the national team. But my A and B team used to play in the state finals in one town. So it was crazy competitive. But
yeah.
Having said all that, when things started going wrong and I started getting all the rejection letters in this business, I was used to it.
Yep.
Right? So you make your way through law school. Wasn't easy. Got
yep.
married young.
Very
you
young.
You were married, Pat.
23 and 22.
You were kind of being honest. You said a couple of times you separated. You were arguing a lot.
Yep.
You wanted to watch the Mets and turn the television. She said, we don't watch television during dinner.
That's exactly right. The opening day for you New York Mets fans out there, imagine this. Opening day, 1986.
The last time the Mets won the World Series, they were going to have a great year. It's opening night. They're playing the Pittsburgh Pirates, and Doc Gooden is pitching. And I come home from law school, and I grab the plate of dinner, and I go to move into the front of the TV. And she said, where are you going? And I said, I'm going to watch the game. She goes, no. You watch the game after dinner. I said, well, no, but the game's getting ready to start, so I want to watch it now. And she said, we don't eat dinner in front of the television set. I was 23, she was 22, and I said, well, the hell with that. I'm watching dinner from the TV. That led to a really unpleasant evening, as you might imagine. You know Mary Pat, so you know it probably led to a really unpleasant evening. And we had some really rough times in the first 4 or 5 years of our marriage because we got married very young. We were both A-type personalities.
She was the breadwinner, you were the student.
Totally. She was going to Wall Street every day and working and making money, and I was going finishing law school. And so all those things were really hard, but another lesson I learned is that there's no substitute for hard work with anything, whether it's in your career, whether it's in the avocations like sports or other things that we love, or whether it's marriage. You know, marriage is not a given. Marriage is hard work.
Oh, yeah.
And you've got to put the hard work into that relationship all the time. And we decided back then that we didn't want to pitch it in, that we wanted to work hard at it, and we wanted to try to make the marriage better. And now, you know, 32 years and 4 children.
She can't shake you.
No, I'm a barnacle now. I'm stuck on her. I told her, you know, it's a funny story, Brian. When I was governor, I told her, listen, if you're tired of me, leave me now because I got a really good place to live. I won't have to have one of those depressing bachelor apartments, right? Yeah. So I got this free mansion to live in. But I said, if you haven't left me by the time I leave the governorship, you're stuck with me for the rest of your life. That's it. So she's now stuck.
Your first foray into politics was?
I ran for county freeholder, which is the equivalent to a county commissioner in other states, in my local county because I was angry. Because the county wanted to widen the road in front of our development. And when we went to go and argue about it with them, they wouldn't hear us.
Right.
And so I said, who are these arrogant people? And then I found out they were up for election that year. So I was 30 years old, and I said to my wife, the heck with it, I'm going to run against these guys. And she's like, well, what do you want to do that for? And I said, they deserve to be beat. I could do that job better than them. I ran in a 9-person primary for 3 seats, and I came in first place and wound up getting elected.
You win, but then you lose.
Yeah, I didn't get reelected. 3 years later, as I say, they disinvited me. and it's very funny because the big state newspaper wrote a story on me leaving because I was 33 years old, and they said a once promising political career is now over.
And what changed?
I went back to practicing law, but I learned from that experience. I learned that maybe I was a little too hard-headed. I learned that maybe I didn't listen as much as I should have. And I learned that I had to be more myself and let people get to know me. And so I didn't know I was going to run for office again. The thing that changed my life was that I volunteered to be George W. Bush's lawyer in New Jersey for his presidential campaign in 2000. And I was selected to do it. And after he won, I got to be United States Attorney in New Jersey.
You said, I want to be U.S. Attorney.
I want to be U.S. Attorney, and
there's
a story
in the book that they were going to pass over you, and you went down there, and you fronted that person.
Right. Governor Don DeFrancesco at the time, the guy was the acting governor when Christy Whitman left to be part of President George W. Bush's cabinet. And he had told me he was with me. And then the White House called me and said, the acting governor is, you know, wavering a little bit. So I looked at what his public schedule was, Brian, and he was in Wildwood, New Jersey, for you Jersey Shore folks, all the way down at the end of the state, on the boardwalk, signing a safety bill. And I turned to my law partner, I said, to hell with it, I'm going to Wildwood. And he goes, well, what are you going to do? What are you going to say to the governor? I said, I'm going to confront the governor. So I drove 2.5 hours down to Wildwood. I stood on the pier waiting for him. And when he came on the pier, he said, Chris, what are you doing here? I said, I need to speak to you. So I go, okay, after the bill signing. And he came up to me, and I said to him, they're telling me that you're wavering at the White House. You told me you were with me. What's going on? And he said, that's complete baloney. I'm totally with you. And I took my cell phone out of my pocket, and I said, well, just hit the send button. That's the number of the White House counsel's office, and you can tell them. And I knew at that moment either he was going to take the phone and do it, or I wasn't going to be U.S. attorney. And he took the phone, he hit it, and he said to the guy at the White House, you tell the President of the United States I want Chris Christie to be U.S. attorney. And he handed me the phone back, and it was Labor Day Friday. And he said to me, can I go on my Labor Day weekend now? And I said, yes, Governor, you can. And the irony of that, of course, was not only did he give me my chance then, along with President Bush, to be U.S. attorney, but then 9 years later, I'm the governor myself.
Right. So you did. You loved that job. Best job you ever had for 7 years.
It was.
Then you ran and won. You would do Visiting Our Couch and Fox and Friends.
I was.
And I go,
you guys are helping me with John Corzine.
Yeah. Can this Republican actually win and beat this billionaire?
Yep.
And he actually did and won two terms. And you talk about in your book being lobbied hard. You've been doing the job for about a year. They go, Chris Christie, you got to run for president. Ken Langone and company said, yep, here's the money. Iowa said, here's your entree. And he said, honestly, I'm not ready. I just got here.
Yep.
Almost a vice president to nominee under Romney.
Yep.
You also point out during Romney's campaign, you saw the problems. Backbiters, didn't have the candidate's best interest in mind. So that was as much organizational experience as Romney had as a businessman. It didn't reflect in his team.
Or in his campaign, and it's why he lost. Because in the end, they weren't nimble enough to respond to the Obama attacks. They weren't smart enough to attack Obama on the things they should have attacked him on. And I think in the end, it would have been pretty helpful to him in that regard if I'd been on the ticket rather than Paul Ryan. But in the end, during Hurricane Sandy, when I invited Mitt Romney to come to New Jersey after Barack Obama came to New Jersey, he said no. And it's still one of the dumbest political decisions I've ever seen.
Right. And we asked you on our couch, I'm like, did Mitt Romney call? And you said, you think I'm caring about politics?
Yep.
You yelled at us. Actually,
I did.
More at Steve, but I was sitting on the couch.
I did yell
too.
At Steve.
Right, yeah. We weren't talking politics. You just wanted to know if Romney was coming.
Yeah.
Said, like, my state's underwater.
I said, you think I'm still pulling dead bodies out of buildings? I don't care about politics.
Right.
Yeah. I was a little stressed.
Yeah. I know. Why am I still talking to you? I should still have a grudge. Hey, the name of the book is Let Me Finish. We're getting up to date, but I wanted to start in the beginning. Now you're up to date. This is beginning to be the governor that you know and you tracked. We'll get to know more from Governor Christie, talk more about President Trump and where we go from here when we come back on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
I saw some of these news feeds that I've been watching upstairs of people sitting on the beach in Asbury Park. Get the hell off the beach in Asbury Park and get out. You're done. It's 4:30. You've maximized your tan.
Listen and pick up on some things you didn't know before. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
Are you looking for senior care for your mom or dad but don't know where to start? Hi, I'm Joan London with A Place for Mom. Nobody knows your parent or loved one better than you, and nobody knows senior living better than the experts at A Place for Mom. It's a free service, and we've helped thousands of families find the right place for their mom or dad. There's a place for answers, A Place for Mom. Call today.
Call A Place for Mom at 1-800-379-1174. That's 1-800-379-1174.
Does your water stain and damage your fixtures? Does it smell or taste bad? Are you worried about what's in your water? Water quality should not be painful and worrisome. Get HydroCare Water Systems from Wave Home Solutions with the most advanced purification technologies. Call Wave Home Solutions today at 1-888-973-WAVE or go to bestwaternow.com. HydroCare will eliminate lime scale that causes hundreds of dollars in damage to pipes and appliances without using salt. Well water will no longer smell or stain your fixtures. City water will be purified of harmful chlorine, lead, arsenic, and chemicals. Wave Home Solutions provides the cleanest, healthiest water at every faucet. Satisfaction guaranteed. For more information, call 1-888-973-WAVE, 1-888-973-WAVE, or go to bestwaternow.com. That's bestwaternow.com.
Wave Home Solutions. For a healthy, comfortable home.
Oh, hey.
Hey, did you hear? My friend's company was the victim of an email impersonation attack.
It's a serious threat to every business.
What if cyber criminals target us and trick accounting into making a wire transfer?
Don't worry. We have Barracuda.
So we're secured?
Yeah. Barracuda uses artificial intelligence to detect and block spear phishing and account takeover attempts.
What a relief.
Don't become a victim. Protect your business at Barracuda.com. Barracuda, your journey secured.
This is Fox on Justice. Taylor's Bar and Grill is a popular spot next to the campus of the University of Oregon in Eugene. Just over 2 years ago, two women at the bar became disoriented. A man they didn't know escorted them out of the bar and sexually assaulted them. Police said the man had slipped drugs in their drinks. He's been convicted and is serving a long prison sentence, but now the women are suing the bar. They claim there's been a pattern of drink spiking at Taylor's, and nothing was done to stop it. And worse, Their lawsuit alleges a bartender at Taylor's may have actually worked with certain customers to facilitate the spiking of drinks. They claim the bar security cameras were pointed at the ceiling, not at the people, and they failed to warn customers there was an ongoing problem with drugging. Taylor's is now under different ownership. The lawsuit against the former owner is asking for $5 million in damages. No comment from the defendant. With Fox on Justice, Hank Weinblum, Fox News.
This is Fox News Talk.
Headline Rewind.
1972.
John Dean.
I guess I'd have to say that it was probably the opening act of one of America's great tragedies.
Elvis had a hard time dealing with mother and the little girl that I was to him. To show any kind of vulnerability and security to me was not macho. It was not something that he felt I should see. So our communication was horrible.
We mourn our Israel friends, victims of this brutal assault. The Olympic flag and the flags of all the world fly at half mast. The greater and the more important the Olympic Games become, the more they are open to commercial, political, and now criminal pressure.
News as it happens. News as it happens.
This is Fox News Talk. From Fox News Talk, here's another sound memory.
Science fiction TV series Quantum Leap starts Scott Bakula as Sam Beckett, who would leap to various points in time. And at the end of every episode, he would leap into the next person, giving the viewers a teaser of the next week's episode. The show co-starred Dean Stockwell. The show ran from 1989 to 1993.
Oh, Sam. Have you looked in a mirror yet?
No, I haven't seen any around. Why?
Oh, I haven't seen any mirrors around. Well, that's not surprising.
Well, what does that mean?
I think you've leaped into a...
A what?
A vampire.
Stay tuned to hear more sound memories on Fox News Talk. Talk show that's real. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
I have worked, and I started at $12,000, then it went up to $18,500. Counting on those benefits, the pension, when I retired. And I really feel that you are favoring the affluent. The Exxon, I'd like you to please address that.
Sure.
That Exxon deal, you could have gotten more money. On the dollar. Do I know?
You know that?
Governor, I'm not here to be bullied.
By the way, you're not being bullied because you're asking me questions. I get to ask you questions back. If you're going to make an assertion of fact as a teacher who people in the community respect as a truth teller, then I'd like to know where you get your information to say to this entire group, I know you could have gotten more money.
What that is part of the unscripted nature of your governorship.
It is, and it's. I think, you know, one of the things that we forget about, Brian, was when I came in office in 2010, social media was not at all matured. These social media places like Twitter and Facebook were just kind of maturing, and so was YouTube. And what my staff did more than anything else was, you know, it's one of the chapters of the book, The YouTube Governor. Those moments they put on the internet. And they became viral, and it's what led to me getting a lot of national attention. But stuff like with that interaction with the teacher, you know, those folks for years bullied politicians in New Jersey.
Because they had so much power.
That's right. And they thought, and no one had ever stood up to them before. And I stood up to them, and they didn't like it. And you could tell from the tone of that woman's voice. You know, what went on later in that clip was she talked about how little money she had made when she first started. I said, you know, nobody put a gun to your head. You knew what the job paid. You knew what the benefits were. And the fact of the matter is you make a lot more than $18,000 now, don't you? Because the average teacher in New Jersey makes a hell of a lot more than that. And that woman, as it turned out, wound up making $100,000. And by the way, as you know, teachers don't work the whole year.
Right.
They have the whole summer off.
And you know, I have a great friend of mine that's in the teachers union, gets mad at me every time I bring it up, but you must get it too wherever you go shopping,
yep,
or wherever you go. Well, the problem is people expect a lot from New Jersey, so the taxes are high, the school's got to be good. You were way over budget when you came in,
yep,
much more than you even let on to. You had to go in there and cut.
And
it's their money. You just want to distribute it the right way.
I don't want to take any more of their money, right? So
gotcha.
You're the governor, you don't want to raise taxes like that.
So when you before we get to when you were an attorney and you took on Charles Kushner,
yep,
I want to ask you, so they come after you in 08. Do you regret now, looking back, that you just didn't jump in and do it like Kamala Harris is doing, even though you just got there and you said, I'm kind of new as governorship? Looking back, do you and Mary Pat sit around and go, I should have jumped?
No, because I don't know that I would have beaten Barack Obama. I think I would have beaten Mitt Romney. I don't know that I would have beaten Barack Obama. I don't know that America was going to turn away Barack Obama after one term. It could have happened. But I don't have second thoughts in that regard. You know why, Brian? It's an antiquated thought,
okay,
given that Barack Obama was a state senator and Donald Trump never served in office. But I actually believed that you needed to have more experience to be qualified to be president. And that now looks like an old time. I'm like a dinosaur. But I really didn't believe I was ready. And I said to folks at the time, the only thing worse,
right,
than losing for president would be becoming president and not being ready.
You're running the Governor's Association. You're the most popular governor in the country. Everybody wants you to raise money for selfish reasons and because you're a good guy. And all of a sudden, you win re-election by a wide swath, and it's in a blue state. And then Bridgegate happens,
yep,
and you start hearing about traffic redirection. And then you start getting confronted, and you handle it the way you always do. Here it is, cut 27.
I worked the cones, actually, Matt. Unbeknownst to everybody, I was actually the guy out there. I was in overalls and a hat, so I wasn't. But I actually was the guy working the cones out there. You really are not serious with that question.
So there's a lot of people that don't even believe. They believe that you knew what was going on and that you were being sarcastic. You did not know your staff had anything to do with that. And that moment, you were saying, of course I didn't know anything about it.
Of course. And that's what I was saying. I was being New Jersey sarcastic. But in the end, listen, I deal a lot in the book, as you know, for two chapters with Bridgegate. And the fact is that we hired someone to investigate this for the governor's office, a prominent national law firm, Gibson Dunn. They interviewed everybody they could who wasn't taking the Fifth Amendment. And in 2 months, they came back and said there are three people responsible for this: Bill Baroni, Bridget Kelly, and David Wildstein. And that's it. And nobody else knew anything. There's no evidence that anyone else knew anything. These three acted alone. The U.S. Attorney's Office took 3 years, and they came to the same conclusion.
Right.
But at that point, my aspirations for the presidency, and in large measure, my reputation in New Jersey, had been ruined by an investigation that was led by a biased U.S. attorney who wanted to get me, but finally had to give up because he knew he didn't have any evidence.
Christopher Wray, the future FBI director, was your lawyer.
He's
you
my
think
lawyer.
He did a great job. You recommended him to the president.
He did an amazing job, and I told the president. And the president called me after he fired Jim Comey because I had recommended that he fire Jim Comey during the transition in November of 16. Think about how much different the world would have been if he had actually done it then.
Yep.
But I recommended that to him. And when he called me about the FBI director, I said, one name only, Christopher Wray. He picked him, and I think the FBI is a better place.
Let me finish the name of the book. Chris talks about his run for the presidency and the Trump administration and the picks he would have made had he been allowed to run the transition team.
Is a test to find out if you know it all when it comes to children. Time starts now. Name one of the leading killers of U.S. children age 1 to 13. What's the best way to protect children in a car crash? At what age and size should a child start using a booster seat? Where can you find the answers to these questions?
Car crashes are one of the leading killers of U.S. children. Many of those deaths could be prevented by making sure that kids are in the right seat for their age and size. Don't assume you know it all when it comes to car seats for your child. Go to safercar.gov/the right seat and know for sure. That's safercar.gov/the right seat. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
I'm out. Ashley DeVorkin with a Fox Celebrity Profile on Tim Allen and Nancy Travis of Fox's Last Man Standing. Already in its seventh season and first on Fox, the sitcom revolves around a married father of three girls whose world is dominated by women. Tim believes the show's core relationship centers on his on-camera wife.
We're all older. Well, not Nancy, of course. She stays
Thank
the
you,
same
Tim.
Age. We're all, everybody gets older. The family grows up. The girls are now grown. I always kind of thought it was something to do with Outdoor Man, but it really isn't. That's always a B story. It's always a comedy story. I really enjoy working with
You'd
Hector.
You'd be saying the opposite if Hector was sitting here.
If Hector
but
was here,
you.
He'd be the most important.
And when it comes to his characters, vlogs, and political beliefs, Tim embraces the perspective.
We take a shot at being funny. We take a shot at the political parties. You have to have a point of view. So Baxter is definitely a conservative, right-leaning guy.
Last Man Standing Season 7 continues Friday nights on Fox. Ashley DeVorkin, Fox News.
Ranger Station, Ranger speaking.
Yeah, hi. I'd like to report a bear sighting.
Location?
In the woods, just outside of town.
Oh, not surprising. You've got your home. Bears have theirs.
Yeah, but see, this wasn't just any bear. This bear was wearing jeans and a hat, as in a Smokey Bear.
Jeans and a hat. That's definitely Smokey. What exactly did he have to say?
Well, we were about to head home, you know, after having a bonfire.
Oh, I can guess where this is going.
Right, right. See, Smokey told me the fire wasn't actually out. He said if it's too hot to touch, it's too hot to leave.
That's true. Did you know that 9 out of 10 wildfires are caused by humans? That means 9 out of 10 wildfires can be prevented.
Wow, no kidding?
I'm a forest ranger. We never kid.
Sorry.
that was a joke.
Oh.
If you see someone in danger of starting a wildfire, step in and make a difference, because 9 out of 10 wildfires are caused by humans. Brought to you by Smokey Bear, the U.S. Forest Service, your state forester, and the Ad Council. Learn more at SmokeyBear.com.
Only you can prevent wildfires.
Now, from the historical audio archives of Fox News Talk.
In the 1970s and 80s, one of the most successful songwriting duos was Elton John and Bernie Taupin. Elton John discusses their music composing relationship.
He writes the lyrics first and gives them to me, and then I write the songs for them. In the old days, I would slice bits of verses out and cut things here and there. It's not so bad now, but it's always been lyrics first. Very, very rarely has I ever sometimes suggested a title for a song or maybe a melody, but Don't Go Breaking My Heart is the only one I can think of. And I enjoy that process. People say, you know, why don't you write your own lyrics? Well, I don't really want to. I enjoy writing with Bernie. I love it. And it's a magical, and he's one of my dearest friends, and I love him so much. But why would I want to change something that gives me so much pleasure?
Stay tuned to hear more history as it unfolds before your ears. It's the audio archives of Fox News Talk.
The Dean's List with Janice Dean.
A church in Dallas, Texas makes the Dean's List for rallying around federal employees living without pay due to the longest government shutdown in U.S. history. Concord Church pastor Brian Carter asked anyone who is a federal employee or family member to stand up and come to the altar for prayer before he surprised them with a gift. Everyone received a $100 gift card to Walmart, and through community partnerships, the church also provided food pantry services and help with utilities. This meant a lot to Anticia Parker, an essential government worker who has been working at the IRS for 20 years. She lost a home after she was pre-approved because of a lost paycheck. She says she went to church for comfort and walked away with a blessing. Pastor Carter says the church needed to stand up and serve those struggling in this difficult season, because when the community hurts, so does the church. Thank you, Pastor Carter and Concord Church, for your gift and prayers to those who need it most. Janice Dean, Fox News.
Show like no other. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Governor Christie's here. His book, Let Me Finish, is out. It's got a lot of stuff in it. I want to give you a background on the governor. I think we just assume he's always been famous and known. He wasn't, and that was his journey. So, Governor, we talked about you decide to run in 2016. It ends up not going your direction. But one thing I like to fast forward to is the thing this book comes back to. Your relationship as when you were U.S. attorney with Charles Kushner, the dad of Jared Kushner. You didn't pursue his dad. This story went after you. A videotape ends up on your lap. That videotape showed Charles Kushner's brother with a hooker, right? Or some type of prostitute,
yeah,
a call girl, whatever you want to call it. And it was him. The brother was giving you the tape and said, my brother Charles, yep, set me up.
Yep. Here's the way it worked. It was his sister, his sister's husband. Charlie hired a hooker to go and seduce his brother-in-law and gave him the MO of where his brother has breakfast in the morning, all the rest of it, gave it to the hooker. They videotaped the two of them having sex in a hotel room. He took that videotape and mailed it to his own sister to attempt to intimidate her from testifying before the grand jury.
Okay.
Now, if you're the U.S. attorney in New Jersey and the sister comes to you with that tape and that story and you verify that the person, the hooker, and the person doing the videotaping are connected to, because they've made phone calls to, Charles Kushner, how do you not bring that case?
He gets 24 months.
Yep.
Jared Kushner's his son. He marries Ivanka. So you are going to be in charge of the transition.
Yep.
And you were the first governor to, and good friend and noted politician, to side with the president after you drop out of New Hampshire. So you drop out, you go to him, you give the president a lot of credibility, and you guys are buddies anyway.
Yep.
And you talk about how you first met him in the book. And then it becomes clear that Jared's got a huge problem with you.
Yep.
How does it become clear? You get the job in the transition, there's pushback. Wait,
yeah,
a second. I'm setting up a transition on still a long shot nominee.
Yep.
And I'm going to control for free. I'm going to set up a transition that's going to take me 6 months and ask my friends to work for free.
Correct.
So Jared Kushner opens up on you in front of Donald Trump. What happens?
He comes into Donald's office the day we were going to announce me as transition chairman and essentially in front of me makes the argument to Donald that I'm not trustworthy because of the way I treated his father. And he said that it was a family matter and that I should have never been involved in it and it should have been settled by the family or the rabbis. And that as a result, I wasn't trustworthy, and I shouldn't get the transition. And Donald, you know, to his credit, stood up and said, listen, Chris was doing his job. You can't criticize Chris for doing this. Your problem is with your own family. You can't criticize Chris for this, and I'm going to keep Chris as transition chairman. But it didn't end. The funny part of the end of that story was that was at 11 o'clock in the morning. At 5 o'clock that afternoon, a story broke in the New York Times saying that Jared was going to be in charge of the transition, according to anonymous sources in the campaign.
Who do you think that was?
Well, listen, I put in the book, I think it was Jared. I think he wanted to undercut his own father-in-law's decision. He knew we were then going to, that was a Friday, we were going to announce the transition on Monday. And so he wanted to get that story out there to sow some seeds of doubt as to who was really in charge, despite the fact that his father-in-law, the candidate,
right,
had told him that day, don't do it.
So you end up getting it. But he gets, and you guys end up interacting. He,
yep,
goes to you constantly for advice, calling you all the time. But yet what happens, and you go into detail about the win, and we'll go back to that. So Donald wins. It looks like all your 6 months of work is going to come true.
Correct.
Right? You have somebody for every position and a depth chart. You have executive orders written out for the president and had,
yep,
executed them. You're a lawyer. So,
yep,
you have legal people doing it. You guys got Mike Rogers working for free. You convinced some Republican establishment to join you. And we'll go over some of the connections that you made and what the staff would have looked like. And then what happens?
2 days after the election, I'm running the second meeting of the transition committee post-election. After the meeting's over, Steve Bannon says he wants to see me down in his office. I go down there, and we wind up sitting across from each other. And he says, I want to clue you in. We're going to make some changes. And I said, okay, what are we doing? And he said, you're out. And he said, and not only are you out, we don't want you involved in the transition at all, and we don't want you back in the building.
Yeah.
And I said to him, you know, I want to know who made this decision, because I know it wasn't you. And he said, it really doesn't matter who made the decision, we just expect you to comply. And I finally said to him, if you don't tell me who made the decision, I'm just going to go downstairs and tell the press it was you. And so he finally then said to me, it was the kid, which is how he referred to Jared. He said, he's been taking an axe to your head with the boss ever since I've been here.
And the president didn't step up, which I find stunning. He knows you have binders of people, sorry, Mitt Romney, of people to fill every position. And some of the things you had Admiral McRaven as chairman of Joint Chiefs of Staff. Now, he despises the president. He comes out and says he's unworthy. You had him convinced differently?
What we did was we believed that we could get a whole bunch of these people involved, and when the president sat across from him, that they would sell each other on the fact that this was important for the country to do.
You also had Fred Smith, FedEx, as Secretary of
Founder,
Defense.
That's exactly. Founder and CEO of Federal Express. Who better to run the Defense Department? And by the way, a Marine veteran.
You also, who do you have for Secretary of Labor? Do you remember?
Secretary of Labor, I think we had Governor Scott Walker.
Yeah, Governor Scott Walker. WellPoint CEO Angela Brady was somebody who would have been instead of Price, right?
Right. Or Alex Azar. We had both of them on that list.
So you had both of them on the list.
Yep.
So what you had is a lot of people on the list, like Mitch Daniels, Secretary of Education.
Right.
A lot of people on that list that would have gotten confirmed easier, but were extremely experienced. And you especially did not like Scott Pruitt, right? You knew Scott Pruitt was going to be a problem.
No, we knew Pruitt was going to be a problem. And we had a number of people slated for EPA that were much more qualified. And most particularly, we were opposed to Mike Flynn as National Security Advisor, and we were recommending not only someone like Henry McMaster, who we already selected, but also General Peter Pace, who also was a former chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff.
Now, do you believe that these people would have worked for the president, because since they've become very critical?
I believe they would have, because remember, we're at a different time. The president had just been elected, and I think everybody believed, as General McMaster said at the time, that you have to serve the country.
AG or VP, that's the only thing you told the president you were interested in.
Yep, and I told him that all the way back when I endorsed him in February of 16.
They pick Senator Sessions.
Yeah.
When should Senator Sessions, by the way, huge mistake, everybody agrees.
Yep.
You would have killed it at that job, and you would have watched the president's back while still staying within the law. I think that's pretty clear. Number two, what did Sessions do wrong, and why is it? And I want you to hear what Michael Mukasey said about Sessions recusing himself. Cut 33. This whole thing got started because Attorney General Jeff Sessions recused himself. Should he have done that?
Yes, he should have done that, because maybe the timing was somewhat premature, but eventually he would have had to recuse himself, because there is a regulation in place that says that if you work on a campaign, you cannot participate in an investigation of it. Black and white. That's what the Deputy Attorney General is for.
So you would have said, okay, did Mac McCasey say anything wrong there?
No, but what he gets wrong, and he skates over, maybe the timing was an issue. He should have told the president this in November when he was asking for the job. By the way, Mr. President, I'm going to need to recuse myself on the Russian investigation because I was involved in the campaign, and I can't investigate the campaign. He didn't tell the president that. He allowed the president to appoint him. And by the way, I don't believe that's why he recused himself. I believe he recused himself because he got caught giving testimony that was incorrect, inaccurate, to the Senate Judiciary Committee regarding his interactions with Russians. And when that heat got turned up,
right,
he decided he wanted out.
So what would you have done?
I wouldn't have recused, first of all, because I remember I left the campaign in April and went to the transition. So I wouldn't have had to recuse. I was not involved in the campaign except to do debate prep for the president, and that certainly is not something that would necessitate
my recusal. In all the conversations you had with the president, did you ever hear Russia come up?
No.
Did you ever hear, do you believe, from what you've learned from Roger Stone's problems to Michael Flynn's problems to Rick Gates' problems, do you believe that touches the president?
I don't.
Why?
Because I think those problems, like for instance, you look at Manafort, his problems all occurred years before he ever even worked for the president. Roger Stone's stuff was messing around with WikiLeaks, and I think in the end Roger does more BSing than he does telling the truth on a lot of stuff. Gates was Manafort's partner, and that's where Gates' problems. I say in the book, this campaign was not organized enough to collude. They were still trying to figure out how to hire, field operatives in Pennsylvania in August. The idea that they're running some kind of Tom Clancy show with the Russians just makes no sense to me. Now, maybe Bob Mueller will prove me wrong, but I, from what I observed, I'd say I don't believe that occurred.
So I read Lieutenant Colonel Michael Flynn's Field of Fight. I read about his background, the fact that he clashed with President Obama like Mattis did. Didn't really surprise me. But when you got a chance to see Michael Flynn, you think he was a train wreck.
Yes.
You said he was a car crash.
He was.
What did you see?
What I saw was somebody who, in private security briefings, where just myself, the candidate, Donald Trump, and General Flynn were, acted in a completely inappropriate way, interrupting briefers, demeaning them, giving speeches, and in many other ways showed himself not to have the temperament to be National Security Advisor, someone who needs to synthesize State Department, Defense Department, and intelligence opinion and make it digestible for the President of the United States. He did not have that type of conciliatory, diplomatic personality. He was not fit for the job.
Flamed out in 24 days, famously.
Yep.
You got to see also some of the problems with Rick Gates. For example, you were supposed to be on the stage next to Rudy Giuliani with your wife at the inauguration. There were two empty seats.
Yep.
Why?
No one gave us the tickets.
So you sat in a pretty good seat.
Yeah, I still sat with all the governors. But Rudy Giuliani's yelling to me from the platform, come down here. I'm like, what are you talking about? I don't have tickets for down there. And he held up two placards on the two empty chairs. One said Governor Chris Christie, the other said Mary Pat Christie.
So you said, okay, fine, but that just gave you a bad feeling about what this presidency was going
to
be like.
Sure, if you can't get the inauguration right, it's tough to get the government right.
I think one thing that people should know if they're just tuning in, president will like reading this book. I think it'll give him perspective he didn't know. He'll know exactly what you didn't bother him with a lot of the details out of respect for him, the candidate, and the president, and the president-elect. But there's no way he would be upset with this book. But you do call out Gates. You say Manafort fell asleep while he was talking to you in a meeting.
He did.
You said this guy is bad news from day one, out to get Corey Lewandowski from day one.
Totally from day one. His job, as he was signed the job, to go and get rid of Corey. And he did. He ultimately was successful in getting rid of Corey.
He got rid of Corey. You like Corey. You like David Bossie. You like Kellyanne Conway.
I do, because, and I'll tell you why I like them. Not only are they good people, but, Brian, they're also incredibly competent people.
Right.
And the president needs more competent people around him.
All right. I want you to hear President Trump maybe make his mistake that he'd like to have back, the way he fired James Comey. Keith Schiller brings over a letter, drops it over the FBI. Comey's 3,000 miles away. Not that he didn't deserve to be fired 6 ways to Sunday.
Yep, he did.
But in November.
He earned it.
But here is Trump explaining this to Lester Holt. Cut 32.
Did you ask for a recommendation?
What I did is I was going to fire Comey. My decision. It was not...
You had made the decision before they came in the room.
I was going to fire Comey. There's no good time to do it, by the way.
Because in your letter you said I accepted their recommendation.
Yeah, well,
you had already made the decision.
I was going to fire regardless of recommendation.
So there was no room.
He made a recommendation. He's highly respected. Very good guy. Very smart guy. The Democrats like him. The Republicans like him. He made a recommendation. But regardless of recommendation, I was going to fire Comey, knowing there was no good time to do it.
Is that explanation okay? A little bit later, he brought up because of the whole Russia thing.
Right. I mean, listen, the explanation, he has the right to fire Jim Comey whenever he wants to fire Jim Comey. Jim Comey works for him, and he serves at the pleasure of the president. Here's the problem, though. There was no understanding of what that would cause. And I'll tell you why I know that, and it's in the book. 20 minutes after Jim Comey's firing was announced publicly, I got a call traveling from the governor's mansion up to my home in North Jersey from Jared Kushner, who asked me what I thought of what they did. And I said, listen, I'm not read in as to why you fired
Comey. How are you even talking to him after what he did to you?
Because I love the President of the United States. That's why. And I want to help him. And that's what this book shows over and over and over again, that I put aside a lot of slights that were put on me because I love my country and I love this president.
So Jared thought it would be a good move.
So he said, yeah, what do you think? And I said, listen, I have no idea. Told him. And he said to me, you know what? You're wrong. He said, because the Democrats are vapor locked because they criticize Comey too. They won't criticize the president. I said, Jared, you're working in Washington, D.C. There's no intellectual integrity. In 20 minutes, Chuck Schumer is going to say that the president fired this guy because of the Russian investigation, and you guys are going to be in it up to your ears. And he said, you're wrong. I said, okay. And I got off the phone. That was at like 5:15, 5:30 in the evening. By 9:30 that night, the president's calling me saying, I'm getting overrun here. What's going on? How did this happen? Well, the reason it happened is because no one, if you're going to fire him, have a plan. And understand that if you fire him, you're going to cause an enormous catastrophe from a political perspective. And it's one of the few times Steve Bannon and I ever agreed with each other. Steve said it may have been the worst political decision in presidential history, and it very well may have been.
And it's continuing now. My hope is he's wrapping up. Governor Christie, not as optimistic. One more segment with Governor Christie. Let me finish. Trump, the Kushners, Bannon, New Jersey, and the power of in-your-face politics. Back in a moment.
It's Brian Kilmeade.
All
Attention all authors. Page Publishing is looking for authors. Have you written a book and want to get it published? Page Publishing will get your book into bookstores and for sale online at Amazon, Apple iTunes, and other outlets. They handle all aspects of the publishing process for you. Printing, cover art, publicity, copyright, and editing. Call 800-501-3689 now for your free author submission kit. That's 800-501-3689 for your free author submission kit. Again, 800-501-3689.
We try to make healthy choices, but do you ever choose the air you breathe? Now you can, with a complete indoor air quality package from Wave Home Solutions. Included is the Wave Smart Ventilation Unit with computerized sensor control and app to reduce moisture, mold, odors, and insect infestation from your basement or crawl space. It also expels harmful gases such as radon, carbon monoxide, and other pollutants. Addressing the worst air in your home will transform the entire house. Add the Wave 6-stage hospital-grade air purifier, the only one with HEPA filtration, 2 UV lamps, and other processes for a 99% kill rate of a broad range of pollutants and allergens. The Wave Indoor Air Quality Package will make your home a drier, cleaner, and healthier one all year round. It's time you choose the air you breathe. Choose Wave Home Solutions. Call 888-979-WAVE. That's 888-979-WAVE. Or visit dryhousenow.com. Dryhousenow.com.
Wave Home Solutions for a healthy, comfortable home.
If you are behind on your bills, then this message is for you. How would you like to have a large portion of your credit card debt or medical bills forgiven? National Credit Card Relief would like to give you free information on a proven debt forgiveness program. It's not bankruptcy. It's not consolidation. This special program actually wipes clean the portion of your debt that is forgiven. Call for your free forgiveness information now. 800-291-6670. That's 800-291-6670. Don't wait. Call 800-291-6670. Not available in North Dakota.
This is Fox on Justice. The coroner is calling it a homicide, and local citizens want justice.
Pass is incomplete, no flag.
Yes, we're talking about the non-pass interference call in the NFC Championship game on Fox.
Crowd's going crazy as there's no flag right on the Saints sideline.
We all thought that we should have won that game.
Max Unger of the New Orleans Saints speaking for anguished fans after the loss to the Rams. The St. Tammany Parish coroner says the Saints' season died due to blunt force trauma to the head and chest. And now New Orleans lawyer Frank D'Amico is filing a lawsuit, asking a court to order Commissioner Roger Goodell to invoke NFL Rule 17, Section 2, Article 3, which gives the commissioner the power to take corrective measures when a game is extraordinarily unfair. D'Amico would have the league throw the flag for pass interference, turn back the clock, and replay the rest of the game. Talk about your legal Hail Mary. With Fox on Justice, Hank Weinblum, Fox News.
From Fox News Talk, here's another sound memory.
Radio commercials have been in our popular culture since 1922, but the decades of the 50s and 60s provided iconic performers hawking all kinds of products, like Ray Charles for Coca-Cola. Shannon for Pepsi.
You're in the Pepsi generation. Come alive. You're in the Pepsi generation.
Stay tuned to hear more sound memories on Fox News Talk. The more you'll know.
It's Brian Kilmeade.
Well, what's the reaction there? Because Chris Christie's still in good terms with the president.
I would say after this book, the answer would be no. President doesn't like people who violate his trust. I don't either. I like Chris. He's a friend, and I respect him. But I think when people go out and they take things that they've learned in private and in secret, and they betray the trust of someone who gave them confidence, I just think that's wrong. I think to profit off that is not appropriate.
So what's your reaction, Governor? I was surprised by his reaction, but all we had was the excerpts of the
right.
book.
Yeah, well, listen, I love Mike Huckabee. We've been friends for a decade. I wish he would have given me a little more benefit of the doubt and actually seen the book before he condemned me and it. And I think Mike is going to owe me a big apology when he reads the book. And you know what? When he apologizes to me, Brian, I'll accept it because I like the guy. He's a good guy with a big heart and a wonderful person. And so I forgive him for prejudging something he hadn't read. A
couple other things. You do not forgive Bob Woodward. You think he made a lot of stuff up and you know it for a fact.
But by the way, it's sloppy reporting at a minimum. If you're going to report a conversation with only two people in the room, me and Steve Bannon, and you never speak to me? To
right.
check whether what is being reported is accurate. That's not the work of, you know, America's greatest investigative reporter. And by the way, just so you know, I told Bob this to his face. So this is not something where like, oh, I write it in the book and take a cheap shot. I sought him out and I told him to his face it was shoddy reporting.
And you think Bannon is what? Steve Bannon is?
A bad guy. A bad guy.
Came off arrogant.
Arrogant. I say in the book, he's the only guy like who can look pretentious and like an unmade bet at the same time.
Do you believe the president can make these next 2 years great?
Yes, he can. He's got to get better people around him, and he's got to be willing to delegate more authority to people to let them do things for him to help him. If he does that, because when he's running for re-election, he's not going to be able to do all this on his own. And so he needs to focus.
Is there a scenario where you join his administration?
Unlikely. But I never say never. He knows the things that I love and that I care about, and if I get a chance to do those things, I'll try to help him.
Has he responded to the book?
Not yet, but he only got it on Saturday.
Do you think he'll read it?
I hope he will. I don't know. I don't know how much time he has to do that stuff.
Who has hurt New Jersey more, the Sopranos or the Jersey Shore?
Oh, God, the Jersey Shore. Oh, those kids. You know, first of all, remember, they were from Staten Island. They're not our people.
But the Sopranos are. You
they
like them
are. Up. Listen, you know what? The Sopranos was great art.
Okay,
great
fine.
Art.
It's true.
It's,
and I
know?
Miss them already, but they are coming back.
And I miss Jimmy Gandolfini.
Right. I'll tell you, I need another hour of your book. Come back on this when the paperback. Let me finish the name of the book. Go get it. You will not regret it. If you like this show, you'll like the stories he tells. Governor, thanks so much.
Brian, thanks for the hour. It was a lot of fun.
Are you looking for senior care for your mom or dad but don't know where to start? Hi, I'm Joan London with A Place for Mom. Nobody knows your parent or loved one better than you, and nobody knows senior living better than the experts at A Place for Mom. They've helped thousands of families find the right place for their mom or dad.
I was so glad that I called A Place for Mom. My advisor really listened and was truly my partner in finding senior care for my dad. She went out of her way to get to know him as a person and was always there whenever I had a question.
The senior living advisors at A Place for Mom partner with thousands of families every month, listening and offering local knowledge and advice to help find the best senior living communities across the country. And it's a free service. Here's the number.
Call A Place for Mom at 1-800-467-7530.
There's a place for answers. A Place for Mom. Call today.
Call A Place for Mom at 1-800-467-7530. That's 1-800-467-7530.
Now, from the historical audio archives of Fox News Talk.
The nation's air traffic controllers went on strike on August 3, 1981, grounding about 7,000 daily flights. 3 days later, President Ronald Reagan took an unprecedented move to break the strike. He fired all 12,000 air traffic controllers in retaliation.
Let me read the solemn oath taken by each of these employees. I am not participating in any strike against the government of the United States or any agency thereof. It is for this reason that I must tell those who fail to report for duty this morning, they are in violation of the law, and if they do not report for work within 48 hours, they have forfeited their jobs and will be terminated.
Stay tuned to hear more history as it unfolds before your ears. It's the audio archives of Fox News Talk.
News this hour from townhall.com. I'm Ron DeRockstra. Virginia's governor says he's put on blackface during a Michael Jackson dance contest once, but denies that he's in a racist yearbook photo from a medical school annual back in 1984. Ralph Northam says he will not resign, even though the call for him to step down is growing louder.
It is definitely not me.
Virginia Governor Ralph Northam says there's no way he's the person dressed as the Ku Klux Klansman in the photo.
Absolutely not.
Or the person in blackface. And he's certain of it because he says he made other memorable mistakes during that period.
I did participate in a dance contest in San Antonio, in which I darkened my face as part of a Michael Jackson costume.
He says he regrets not realizing at the time how offensive that might be, but he says he wants to earn Virginians' forgiveness and he will not heed calls to resign.
I cannot in good conscience choose the path that would be easier for me in an effort to duck my responsibility to reconcile.
I'm Ben Thomas.
Vice President Mike Pence told a crowd in Florida that it's time to take action to end the regime of Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro.
Pence met near Miami with people who were forced to get out of Venezuela.
There are many lives in danger, and the problems that were bad then are worse now.
Later, Pence talked about the transition to opposition leader Juan Guaido.
All options are on the table.
The vice president said this is no time for dialogue. It's time to end the Maduro regime.
And Nicolas Maduro would do well not to test the resolve of the United States of America.
Pence says he hopes economic pressures can bring out a peaceful transition in Venezuela. I'm Ed Donahue.
The second in a string of powerful storms battered California Saturday, shutting down key highways. Flash flood warnings were issued for huge swaths of Southern California. News and analysis at townhall.com.
Diabetes, high blood pressure, anxiety meds, everyone's on them. If you're a 50-year-old male, maybe a bit porky, and you may even have type 2 diabetes, $1 million of term insurance may only cost you about $200 a month. Call Term Provider. Speak with Big Lou at 800-444-2013. Big Lou will find a term life policy for you even if you have type 2 diabetes, are overweight, or have high blood pressure. Term Provider has helped thousands of people like you who think they can't afford term life insurance. To buy $1 million of affordable term life for you, all you need to do is call Big Lou at 800-444-2013. Lou will make sure the scales are tipped in your favor. Call 800-444-2013. Big Lou will answer your call and work to fit you into a term life policy that you can afford. Remember, Big Lou's like you. He's on meds, too. Call 800-444-2013. 800-444-2013.
Online travel company Expedia and one of its subsidiaries are being sued over an alleged failure to pay overtime to hundreds of customer service representatives across the country.
The complaint was filed in U.S. District Court in Seattle by Laurie Krause of Melbourne, Florida, who's worked with the subsidiary Agencia LLC since 2014. Her complaint says she and other customer service representatives have been misclassified as independent contractors rather than employees, and that the company has failed to pay overtime, even though they routinely work more than 40 hours a week. One of her attorneys said that violates federal labor law.
Correspondent Jeremy House reporting. The representatives in question work from home and handle phone calls from business clients looking to book travel or hotel rooms. France's yellow vest protesters again took to the streets in Paris and a number of other cities to keep pressure on President Macron's government. It's the 12th weekend. Breaking news and analysis at townhall.com. An Air Force Academy cadet has been convicted of sexual assault at a military trial.
The Colorado Springs Gazette reports Armis Sunday was convicted Friday after a four-day court-martial. His attorneys say an appeal is planned based on evidence that the judge barred them from discussing at the trial. The charge carries a sentence of up to 30 years in prison. Prosecutors say Sunday assaulted a female cadet while she was asleep at her dorm room. Defense attorneys say the two had consensual sexual contact. Patrick Frost reporting.
The lineup for the Sunday news shows goes something like this. CBS's Face the Nation has an exclusive pre-State of the Union interview with President Trump ahead of his Tuesday night speech. Fox News Sunday welcomes Senators John Hoeven and Ron Johnson. And on ABC's This Week, scheduled to be behind the microphones, Senator Roy Blunt and Senator Dick Durbin. NBC's Meet the Press welcomes Senator Sherrod Brown and Rick Scott. More on these stories at townhall.com. I'm Ron DeRockstra.
in 30 seconds. Enjoy. Fox News Radio Studios in New York City, giving you opinions and facts with a positive approach. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everybody. Brian Kilmeade here. Thanks so much for listening on the Thursday edition of the show. I can't wait. After today's show, I'll get into a little bit warmer weather. About 12 o'clock, the car will pick us up and bring us to the airport, and we out to Super Bowl 53. We'll be coming to you from the WSB Studios, one of our fine affiliates in Atlanta, one of the most powerful stations in the country. We'll be coming from there on Friday and Monday, and I'll be able to give you up close and personal, including some original interviews for the Monday show. And we'll have a great roster of guests tomorrow while still covering the news that matters most. Governor Mike Huckabee is going to be with us in the first, in the beginning of the show, and then Mark Leibovich will be here, chief national correspondent for New York Times Magazine. And he just wrote a book we loved, Big Game, the NFL in Dangerous Times. So, we begin.
Now, with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's Big Three.
Number three.
People around the world and other governments around the world, both our partners and our adversaries, how are they going to take seriously what U.S. intelligence says if Donald Trump continues to disagree with it publicly?
John Brennan spends his whole day exasperated. Trump versus intel chiefs. While edited remarks make it seem like the two are clashing on terror assessments, closer examination shows the two sides are much closer than you think, although the president got kind of angry and tweeted some things out earlier.
Number two.
But I think the real question is, what kind of country do we want to live in? Do we want to live in a country that is so far to the left and that is moving towards socialism?
Billionaire former Starbucks CEO Howard Schultz slamming Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez's proposal to tax the very wealthy. And at a 70%, she fired back on Twitter, quote, Why don't people ever tell billionaires who want to run for president that they need to work their way up, or maybe they should start with city council first? She started as a bartender. Has anyone looked at her resume lately? We'll discuss.
Number one.
So to everybody who's wondering how this movie ends, it ends this way. We're going to build a wall one way or the other. The president's not doing anything crazy. What's crazy is that they're fighting him after having voted the way they did in the past.
We begin. Both sides begin talking about a border deal as the president begins a border campaign. A new poll shows 72% of you expect no deal, but I'm one of the 28% that says one will be struck. And we'll be taking your calls. And I see we've got calls already, 1-866-408-7669. And we're going to be talking about this full-term abortion situation, too, with Governor Mike Huckabee, who's now in studio. If you're smart enough to have downloaded the app to Fox Nation, you're seeing Governor Huckabee write down all the things he wants to say to me in front of me. Or is that a list of shopping things? What are you actually writing down?
This is a grocery list.
Really?
So, I've got a Super Bowl thing going on Sunday night. I've got to come up with how many different bags of chips I got to buy and dip and all.
You're
that
not even
stuff.
Concentrating on the radio show you love most.
No, I'm a multitasker, Brian. I can handle 23 different things at one time. 23 and me. That's
fantastic. We will find out your heritage in the process. And I would recommend you call Peapod. A phone call away. You tip the guy. He delivers or she delivers. So, Governor, a couple of things. First off, are you one of the 72% who thinks there's not going to be a deal, or the 28% like I am that thinks there will be a deal by February 14th?
Well, I'm not sure there is, because I don't think the Democrats want one. The only way this is going to happen is when there are enough rational, sane Democrats in Congress who realize their leaders are taking their cart off the cliff. And the president has laid out compromise after compromise on DACA, TPS. He's given everything that he can give and more to the point that some of the Republicans are not even happy with him. And if they don't come through, then it clearly shows they're not interested in border security. They're not interested in protecting the American public. They want open borders, and that's not what the American people want, and it's going to be a disaster for them in 2020.
So we had this Republican congressman on who said he had a chance to see the proposal Democrats were putting together, not a dime towards a barrier.
Yeah.
We're not even saying cement wall, which I don't even think we should say cement wall, even pretend it's medieval. It's a choice. If the Israeli model impressed the president because it worked. So he said, let me try that. Then he was open enough to say, hey, guys, I'm listening to the Border Patrol. The bollard fence is really what they like in most of these places. So he said, okay. And he saw the pushback on the left. They said, you know, enhanced fencing. All right, we'll do that. But there was no negotiation. You got to open up the government first. The government's open, Governor. So the Democrats can honestly say, because you know politics better than I ever will, we got something. We made the president open up the government. Republicans could say, in the end, we're not going to remember this in a year, we got 265 miles more of barrier. Why isn't that an opportunity to compromise?
Well, it is an opportunity, but the Democrats are not interested in the compromise. At least their leadership is not. I'm convinced that there are a lot of Democrats who do understand this issue, and I think that they're really frustrated with their own leadership, because for the leadership, they simply see this as a political game and not a sensible, responsible action to protect America and Americans. But these are the same Democrats that voted against Kate's law. That was irrational. Why would you not believe that you should deport people who have a history of repeated deportations, having committed felonies against Americans? There are people who are dead today in America that wouldn't be if we'd enforced our laws.
The reason why people walk around who don't do this every day like us and are stressed and tense and think we're coming apart is because we don't convert our layups. Kate's law is a layup.
Yeah.
This is not stem cell research where both sides have legitimate arguments, but they bitterly disagree. Here is Senator Chris Coons. This gives me some hope. All right. Cut 9.
As you well know, Brian, we've got 700 miles of barrier right now. There are places where that's made a big difference in the dramatic reduction of flow into our country from Mexico. And so there are places where that's been effective, and we're upgrading it with modern technology, and surveillance would make it stronger and more effective. So I wouldn't rule that out. I'm one of many Democrats who have voted to strengthen border security.
And I think that that's a rational Democrat talking who understands that the wall has worked in San Diego. 95% of the drug traffic stopped when they put the wall up. And I'm a very close friend of Duncan Hunter Sr., who was the congressman at the time, 20-something years ago when this was done. And it was a demonstration project, and it demonstrated to be very useful. I've been to that border with Duncan. I've seen firsthand that it does have an impact. I've also flown by helicopter the entire length, top to bottom, of the Israeli security wall. I'll be there a week from tomorrow, in fact, for another 10 days. And I'm going to tell you something. Suicide bombings in Israel went from 1,000 a year to zero. To zero when they put that wall up. Now, they were universally
condemned.
You mean
the medieval wall?
Yeah, that medieval wall that saved a lot of Israeli children who were being blown up in school buses and cafes. Now, if we are serious about protecting Americans, we'll use every means to our disposal. And often it will be drones, and it will be electronics, and it will be maybe the natural borders of the river. But sometimes it will be a physical barrier. And the president has made it very clear. He's not talking about a wall on the entire end of the southern United States, 2,000 miles. He's not talking about that. He is talking about where it makes sense and where the, frankly, experts from Border Patrol suggested it should be. That's where it will be. And why the Democrats are fighting that, I simply don't know.
So I like the good old days where Jimmy Carter is a lot of things, but he wasn't a socialist. So you just wonder who's going to win. You know, you wanted Ford or you didn't want Ford, but it was a time in which we're all Americans, proud to be Americans, and one guy had a different view, maybe on foreign policy. And then even when Bill Clinton won and George Bush, I thought Bush would have been a better president. The economic message resonated better. Bill Clinton compromised, got some stuff done. No one knows the Clintons better than you. But no one thought he was a socialist.
No, he wasn't.
He talked about an American dream, that he was this single parent kid who found a way up. You know, so what happened to the American message?
It's just simply stunning when you see all of the Democrats running for president trying to outleft each other. But let's keep in mind, three left turns is a right turn. So maybe at some point, if these guys keep turning left, the country will turn right, because people deep down in their hearts know that when people say single-payer right. system, that sounds lovely until you think about who's the payer, the government. So if the government is the payer, it's also the provider. And if it's the provider and payer, who's left out of that equation? The two most important people, you, the patient, and your physician. And so it's all about what the government decides. And right. what is health care? Is it a knee replacement? Is it just acute medicine when you have a serious accident or illness? How long do you wait? Who makes the decision as to what level of coverage you get? Then it becomes the government right. making that
but
decision.
A couple of things. You know this, Governor. If any Republican wants to get elected for office and doesn't work the health care issue in a legitimate way to solve it, maybe it's got to yeah. be done with both sides. It's number one on everyone's list. It was
sure.
number one at the midterms.
Yeah.
And I'm telling you, most people are like, well, I don't care if it's Obamacare or not. If I don't have any health insurance, I'm going to go look at it. People are upset about the size of the deductibles, the coverage, the doctors wouldn't take it, so it wasn't effective. But all you saw was Republicans taking apart whatever little they had. That was a terrible message that Paul Ryan did not pull off.
But there is a middle ground that could work for Republicans and work for Democrats. And here it is. The big reason that the private insurance market is so expensive, and the reason that some people want there to be a single-payer system, is because if you have catastrophic illnesses
yeah.
or long-term debilitating illnesses, it skews the impact so that no private insurer can release a policy that a person can afford. So here's what you can do. I think we would agree and accept, as a part of the social contract of America, set aside federal money that would subsidize people who have extraordinary exotic health care costs. Take that out of the basic marketplace.
Name it something.
Yeah.
You know, you name it. Say, by the way, this is my plan.
Yeah.
The catastrophic, my kid has a horrible illness,
yeah.
and he's chronic.
Nobody wants to bankrupt that family or see the kid choked to death on the steps of a hospital. So take care of that family. Do that in a subsidized federal budget way. At the same time, create a market-based solution so people can opt in or opt out of the coverages they want and can afford.
Right.
There is a middle ground to do that, and that's what I think we ought to be talking
right.
about.
Right. But any Republican that thinks that they can avoid that subject is going to lose.
They'll be in real
they
trouble.
They will lose.
Yeah.
So I'm fascinated by this Howard Schultz thing. The blowback that he gets is what Donald Trump experiences on a daily basis.
Yeah.
The anger that's directed at him. But what he's saying, even though he's a liberal Democrat who doesn't like the president, I get it. But what he's saying makes me feel better for the country, that there's some sanity out here. This guy from the projects in Brooklyn, I interviewed him for the Game Suit Camp because he was a football player, wanted to play in college, tears up his knee, thinks to himself, my life is over. Then he was forced to break into the books for the first time in his life. It worked, okay?
Yeah.
So Howard Schultz creates the CEO of Starbucks, becomes a billionaire. He thought that would be a good story to tell. But now he's looking at the Democratic Party and said, I'm going to run for president, but I'm not going to run with those guys. I don't even recognize them. Cut 17.
And if I ran as a Democrat, which I would not do, I would have to be disingenuous given the platform that they are moving towards, which is a level of government takeover of health care, government takeover of free college for everyone, a job for everyone, which tallies about $40 trillion on a basis of a $21.5 trillion level of debt. It's not realistic. So we need a thoughtful, serious conversation.
Yeah, the problem that Howard's going to have as an independent is that he's a train without a track. What people have to understand about an independent...
Because you thought about it, right? Did you think about it?
No, I never thought about it running as an independent. I'm a Republican, and I'm unapologetically one. But the other reason is, unless you are a figure bigger than life, Donald Trump might could have done it. Oprah could do it. I can't think of anybody else in the top of my head who even has the capacity, the charisma, the natural connection with the masses, because Howard Schultz is a smart guy. I have great respect for his business acumen, but he is not a political figure, and he's not known by the masses. Ask a person on the street, even who's standing in line at Starbucks, who is the founder of this company, and nobody can tell you it was Howard Schultz. They don't know.
I agree with you, Governor, but I'm going to take a step back. I like that he's saying it. It makes me feel like I am not insane to say exactly what he thinks.
Well, you are insane. We're not going to go there.
Can we cut his mic, Allison? Because if you don't, do not talk to the staff anymore. When we come back, the governor and a governor were talking at each other. The governor took on Governor Christie's book because the excerpts came out. Governor Christie answered him on our show. Now Governor Huckabee will hear that answer and answer here. here. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show, and my guest thinks I'm nuts.
It's Brian Kilmeade.
Oh, hey.
Hey, did you hear? My friend's company was the victim of an email impersonation attack.
It's a serious threat to every business.
What if cyber criminals target us and trick accounting into making a wire transfer?
Don't worry. We have Barracuda.
So we're secured?
Yeah. Barracuda uses artificial intelligence to detect and block spear phishing and account takeover attempts.
What a relief.
Don't become a victim. Protect your business at Barracuda.com. Barracuda. Your journey secured.
Individuals and businesses with tax problems, listen carefully. Do you feel like you're losing control of your finances? If you owe over $10,000 in back taxes or have unfiled tax returns, we can help you take back control. The IRS is the largest and most aggressive collection agency in the world, and they can seize your bank accounts, garnish your paycheck, close your business, and file criminal charges. Take control of your tax problem now by calling the experts at U.S. Tax Shield and take advantage of the Fresh Start program and new laws that may allow us to negotiate a settlement for the lowest amount possible. Our team of tax attorneys and enrolled agents can stop collections and get you protected so you can take control of your financial future. U.S. Tax Shield offers a price protection guaranteed quote to get you protected today. U.S. Tax Shield is A-plus rated with the Better Business Bureau, so call now. 800-735-8360. That's 800-735-8360. U.S. Tax Shield. 800-735-8360.
If you have hard water, the limescale not only leaves white spots, it clogs pipes and breaks down appliances, costing you hundreds of dollars in energy and wear. Eliminate limescale and other water issues like brown staining, bad odors, and lead with HydroCare water products available from Wave Home Solutions. Wave's affordable systems don't use salts or chemicals. You'll love the way your water tastes, smells, and looks. Satisfaction guaranteed. For more information, go to goodclearwater.com. That's goodclearwater.com.
Bonus track with Laura Ingle.
Taking you deep inside the music. Guitarist David Gilmour of Pink Floyd is giving fans a chance to own some of his most prized possessions for the right price and a good cause.
The money that this sale hopefully will raise is going to go into my charitable foundation and will be used to help do some good in this world.
Speaking with Rolling Stone magazine, Gilmour announced he is auctioning off more than 120 guitars from his collection.
These guitars, they've given so much to me. It's time for them to move on to other people who hopefully will find joy and perhaps create something new.
Gilmour says the money will be going to the larger needs of famine relief, homelessness, and displacement of people throughout the world. Some of the hardware includes the Black Fender Stratocaster, dubbed Black Strat, heard on nearly every song he recorded between 1973 and the mid-1980s, and the 12-string acoustic he used to write Wish You Were Here. The auction will be held at Christie's in New York June 20th. Laura Ingle, Fox News.
From Fox News Talk, here's another sound memory.
Raymond Burr starred as Perry Mason, the longest-running, highest-rated lawyer show in TV history, brought to TV in 1957 and based on a radio show. The jazzy theme was composed by Fred Steiner, whose credits include Star Trek and The Color Purple.
Stay tuned to hear more sound memories on Fox News Talk. Now, from the historical audio archives of Fox News Talk.
Legendary tennis champion Arthur Ashe was the first African-American player to compete professionally in tennis. In leading UCLA to the NCAA title in 1965, he created a tennis program for inner cities in 1968 and was the U.S. LTA amateur champ and won the first U.S. Open at Forest Hills, being ranked co-number one with Rod Laver in that year.
This is still one of the Grand Slam titles, and now Muscles is the only player who won the Grand Slam
this year after a day of rest yesterday. He was pretty tough today, and I look forward to playing him again because for this year we're all square. I think I beat him about a month and a half ago in Detroit under poor lights. So here's hoping we meet in the final of Forest Hills on my turf. So I'll see you in September.
Stay tuned to hear more history as it unfolds before your ears. It's the audio archives of Fox News Talk. Show that's real. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Well, what's the reaction there? Because Chris Christie's still in good terms with the president.
I would say after this book, the answer would be no. President doesn't like people who violate his trust. I don't either. I like Chris. He's a friend, and I respect him. But I think when people go out and they take things that they've learned in private and in secret, and they betray the trust of someone who gave them confidence, I just think that's wrong. I think to profit off that is not appropriate.
Yeah, well, listen, I love Mike Huckabee. We've been friends for a decade. I wish he would have given me a little more benefit of the doubt and actually seen the book before he condemned me and it. And I think Mike is going to owe me a big apology when he reads the book. And you know what? When he apologizes to me, Brian, I'll accept it because I like the guy. He's a good guy with a big heart and a wonderful person. And so I forgive him for prejudging something he hadn't read.
All right, Governor, your serve. Governor Huckabee in studio to Chris Christie's answer, who was in studio for a full hour last
week. Well, now I got to read his book. Look, I do like Christie, and that's the whole point. And I do need to read the book. I've heard some things that he said, and apparently it's not that critical of the president, who is the one that I feel like he has some loyalty to. I don't know that he said anything that's not true. It's just I still would like to think that if you have a position of trust, that you're very careful in what you do with that trust. And if you tell things, you tell them in the most positive way that you possibly can, because revealing things that hurt other people still in the organization,
mm-hmm.
What value does that have? So if he's, and I get it that he's unhappy with Jared. I understand all that. But anyway, I'll try to read the book. I really will. And then if I need to, I will apologize to Chris because I like him. Right. I want to remain friends with him. And I'm not mad at him, and I don't think he's mad at me.
This is the most polite fight ever. Right? This is unbelievable. It's like the two boxers who hug before and after the fight.
We will go out for ice cream right after we have the fight. How's that?
So here's some. Let's talk about your daughter for a second. She sat down with CBN, and she. A lot of people have a problem with the fact that she says that since president became president, God wanted him to be president.
Well, you can look at her perspective coming at it from a biblical perspective of Romans chapter 13 that says that the powers of government are there ordained by God. I mean, you could make the same case and say that Obama was president because God wanted him to be. Now, does that mean God registered to vote in one of the swing states? No, it doesn't. Does it mean that he had a favorite and he was pulling the lever? No. It means that God has purposes bigger than ours and that there are consequences of people's prayers, consequences of the lack of prayers. God does not manipulate us. God does not force us to vote a certain way. But if people prayed and said, please give us a president that will be pro-life. Give us a president that will recognize Israel. Give us a president that will actually support the idea that the Bible could be taught in public schools. Well, there was only one choice in that election. So if that was the prayer of many of God's people and they mm-hmm. prayed that and he became president, I understand what Sarah was saying.
We got 30 seconds, but seven states have a full-term abortion law. It's okay for baby to be born, the mom's life in danger or something, a mental illness, and decide whether that baby lives or not.
It's horrific. This is the most uncivilized savagery that we've ever seen in our culture, and we've got to get to the place where we recognize that from the moment of conception, that is a human being. It's not a stalk of broccoli. It's not a puppy. It's not a dolphin. It's a human being, and we need to treat it with respect and dignity and treat all human beings as being equal.
All right. Governor, thanks so much. You're like a pro.
I, you know, gee, that's a compliment.
You got your own TV show.
Whoa.
You had your own radio show. You're all everything. And you're a great politician and a pastor.
And I like you. I do like you.
So you are smart.
Yeah.
Even though you think I'm insane, and you said that earlier.
But that was all in love.
All right. Mark Leibovich next.
This is the sound of a brand new outdoor grill being hurled off a 20-story building. Now a stylish glass coffee table. An electric guitar. These are the things you could enjoy all cast into oblivion. Because when you throw away money on wasted electricity, you throw away everything you could have bought with it. Visit EnergySavers.gov and get tips on how to save energy and money. Then do things like switch to Energy Star light bulbs or Energy Star appliances, and you could save hundreds of dollars a year. So this doesn't happen to the recliner you've had your eye on, or this to the treadmill on your wish list, or this to the shiny new bike your kid's been asking for. Saving energy saves you money. Learn more at EnergySavers.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Energy and the Ad Council.
Take an ordinary putty knife and scrape off the old wax ring. Place the new wax ring over the flange, then line up the bolts with the bowl and gently set in place, making sure a proper seal is created with the flange and drain. Next?
Dad?
Yeah, sweetie?
Is that a new plumbing manual?
Oh, yeah, honey.
We really need to get some new books.
Right, do you want me to stop?
Nah, I kind of want to know how it ends.
Okay, tighten the bolts, line up the flushing valve to the opening in the top of the bowl, and secure the tank with a screwdriver and crescent wrench.
The smallest moments can have the biggest impact on a child's life. Take time to be a dad today. Call 877-4DAD-411 or visit fatherhood.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
A single ember from a wildfire can travel over a mile. It can ignite and destroy your home and even your community. To that ember, all those branches hanging over your roof might as well be giant matchsticks ready to spark. Pile of dry leaves and twigs clogging your gutters are the perfect kindling to start a fire. And all those debris piles and brush around your yard, which you haven't taken care of yet, are pure lighter fluid, ready to ignite. There are some fire hazards that aren't clearly marked, and they can impact you and your neighbors. Learn to spot them, because your home is better protected from wildfire damage when your whole community is prepared. Visit fireadapted.org for more tips on how to get started adapting your home and community to wildfires. A public service message brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service and the Ad Council.
This is Fox News Talk.
Headline Rewind.
1986.
Despite our repeated warnings, Gaddafi continued his reckless policy of intimidation, his relentless pursuit of terror. He counted on America to be passive. He counted wrong.
Engine's throttling up. 3 engines now at 104%.
Challenger, go and throttle up.
Roger, go and throttle up.
Flight controllers here looking very carefully at the situation. Obviously a major malfunction.
An official announcement from the Council of Ministers. There has been an accident at the Chernobyl Atomic Power Station.
Clearly, this disease, which strikes men and women, children and adults, people of all races, must be stopped. It is estimated that 1.5 million people are now infected with the AIDS virus.
The United States has not swapped boatloads of plane loads of American weapons for the return of American hostages, and we will not.
News as it happens. News as it happens.
This is Fox News Talk.
The Dean's List with Janice Dean.
Fans from Iowa make the Dean's List for saving a referee at a basketball game. Bernie Rangel is happy to be alive. He's a longtime referee officiating 6 different sports over 30 years. But for the first time, he didn't make it to the end of a game.
As soon as the horn blew, and from then on, I remember nothing.
Fellow referee Jamie Brugman ran to the crowd and asked for help.
I was at the right place, the right time, with the right people. That brought me back.
Melanie Herman is a nurse.
There is kind of a nurse's intuition, and as soon as I saw him laying there, and I think everybody that responded had that same feeling because everybody jumped in so quickly.
Bernie says he is grateful for everyone who played a role in saving his life.
Without a guardian angel, how could these individuals come all together? Nurses, EMT, who knew CPR, gave me a second chance of life.
Bernie, we're glad you're okay, and to all of those who helped, you are angels here on Earth. Janice Dean, Fox News.
that makes you think. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
All right, Sarah Friar's in studio. If you're watching on Fox Nation, you see her now. She's the new CEO of Nextdoor, the world's largest neighborhood network that enables truly local conversations to happen online. Because, Sarah, welcome, by the way.
Thanks, Brian. It's great to be here.
So well, the problem is people getting to know everybody. We're all connected. We're not connected to the people next door, literally.
That's exactly it. There's an amazing stat about over 70% of U.S. citizens say they don't know a single neighbor. And we're here to change that.
So using the Internet.
Yeah, absolutely. So it gets you started in an online way. So people join to connect. The minute they join, we were just saying, they start to see a feed happening. And we're in over 90% of all the neighborhoods in the United States. So if you download the app, you're going to find your local community. But from there, they start conversations that often bring them to the offline world. And that's frankly our goal. It's how do we create those physical human-to-human connections?
Because we're not talking to anybody anymore.
No.
Right?
And in fact, we're polarized, right? We only want to talk to people like us when we do talk to people.
Right. And how does this change that?
Yeah, so I think it's, there's actually some great research from folks like David Brooks or Mark Dunkelman, what I call the middle ring. So we start our lives, families are central ring. It's where we have most of our conversations. But the U.S., and it's true globally, there was always a middle ring where people could talk to, you know, the volunteer fire department you might join together, or the local church, or maybe the local school, or the mother's club. That has largely gone away in the U.S., and it's also happening globally. And so there's no place for people to find commonalities that allow them, I call it fill-the-bucket moments, where then you can come back and actually have divisive conversations about things you disagree, because I'm like, in the end, Brian's a good guy. He's a volunteer fire guy, right? How could I not love him, even if we have different, for example, political beliefs?
Right. So how would I do this? So right now, if people are listening and saying, well, I'm on Facebook, you know, I'm on Instagram, I tweet. How do I find out what my neighbor's doing now?
Sure. So it's super easy. You just go download the Nextdoor app, just as you do in the App Store or Google Play, or you can just go online to the web. Once you're there, you'll be asked to verify, and that's very different from those other social networks, right? We take a step right off the bat where we verify that you live in that house, in that neighborhood, and then you'll be up and running on the platform as you, Brian, or in my case, Sarah, and your neighborhood is clear. So as you start being able to see the feed of what's going on in your neighborhood, and I can guarantee you, we cover every neighborhood here, you will have a feed. It's very clear who it is that's posting, what they're posting about, and that just creates a real feeling of trust, because I know it's just my neighbors that I'm working with.
And I imagine advertising comes locally.
Yeah, so that's the beauty of it. So think about now the platform we've built. It's hyper-local in nature. So what most advertisers can't get to is a neighborhood-by-neighborhood type of way to advertise. Now, what we want is that advertisers are part of the community conversation. So if you are Lowe's, for example, you're not just an advert about Lowe's. You're instead an advert about the tiling class that's going to go on Saturday in the local Lowe's, and you start to know the local manager. And so it feels like community building, not just advertisement.
Interesting. So this is out there now in how many communities? You said it's in multiple countries now.
Yeah, so we're actually in 10 countries, which is pretty exciting. So clearly, U.S., huge one for us, over 90% of neighborhoods covered. But if you look at countries like the U.K. or the Netherlands, we're in over 60% of neighborhoods, all the way to one of our youngest countries is Australia. And then in alpha right now, but slowly getting it rolled out, we just went to Scandinavia, so Sweden and Denmark.
So how do I stay in my neighborhood?
Do I stay in my neighborhood? You do.
Am I allowed out of my neighborhood?
You can go to nearby neighborhoods.
But not too many.
But not to Scandinavia. No, because again, it comes back to trust. We want you to know that when you start conversing in that feed, it's just with the people who live around you. There's no one kind of peering into your feed that you don't know. Now, sometimes people want to go broader because if I'm looking for maybe a great business, I might want to go to my nearby neighborhood. Or if my dog gets lost, frankly, dogs don't just run around in your neighborhood. They'll typically run far and wide. And so there's sometimes reasons why you want to go broader. And then actually we see people create groups where they go even smaller. Like, I want to have a little mini neighborhood of my cul-de-sac because I want to have a block party.
How do you define a neighborhood? Like, what's the radius?
It's such a great question. So we don't. What happens with Nextdoor is a lead starts a neighborhood and they plant a flag and they actually draw the boundary. So my neighborhood, for example, crosses a town boundary because we actually live along one street. street. Mm-hmm. The rest of my town lives across a major intersection, and so I have less in common with them than I do with the folks in what I define as my neighborhood.
Right.
And so that's another beauty of the platform, is it's very organic. It's driven by the members themselves. It's not some, you know, top-down view from next door.
Right. So it's almost unhealthy right now. We're all living such separate lives. Even though we're supposedly connected, we're disconnected from the person right to our right. Yeah. I think it's almost comical, the fact that you see people hang out together, but yet they're choosing to be on their phones, as if to say, I found somebody better or something more important. Yeah. Such an insult.
It's shocking. Like, you go to a nice restaurant and people are there on like a date night, and they're checking, and I'm like, you're checking, you missed a tweet or something?
Right.
Like, talk to the person opposite you. And that's what we want to see happen.
Right. I mean, if people don't and they're worried about neighborhood gossip, maybe this is not for them, but you could stay out of the gossip end of it. So, in particular, let's go over, Sarah, your background. What brought you to this next door?
Yeah. So, it was in some ways an easy choice, so very mission driven. Like, I want to build companies that when they are big and impactful, they can change the world too. And I know that sounds sometimes a little too much, but you'll find that everyone at Nextdoor kind of starts with that view. Second, it was a great team that's already in place. It's already got scale. So tens of millions of verified members across the U.S. and now in 10 different countries. And then the third thing for me was actually local commerce. So I came from Square. I have loved small businesses my whole life. I actually have a nonprofit called Ladies Who Launch. So I'm all about people getting started with their business.
And that little square is the thing you put in your iPhone, allow you to swipe and become your own entrepreneur.
You're your own business up and running. And so what I saw in Nextdoor is when local businesses thrive, communities thrive. And so people want that connection too. Like, I want to know that when the plumber came over and did a great job at my house, I'm going to give him a recommendation or her a recommendation. Or like, our local pizza joint is brand new. It's hopping. I was there on Friday night with a group of moms who organized on Nextdoor to show up there. And we want to make sure that Tony's Pizza Place is known as a great place to go from a community perspective. And so that local business component really spoke to me as well.
But, you know, also, I guess politicians are going to be doing reverse forensics and trying to find out who's running the neighborhood in the neighborhood on Nextdoor.
Yeah, well, you know, it's interesting you say it. So the thing that has fallen away generally globally is civic engagement. So you can read any of the literature, right? People are not joining the school board, and then they don't become the district superintendent, and then they don't become the senator, and then they don't run for national. And that whole falling away of talent, right, has ramifications for us as a country. And so what we see starting on Nextdoor is a lot more just civic engagement, like people caring about this new development that's going to happen, or caring about like what's going on with low-income housing and having those conversations. And if we can start more of that, that's a great outcome for society as well as our platform.
Yeah, people only want to run for president. And they don't want to run for state senator or to be on the school board.
You know, I just had dinner last week with 14 of the mayors in my county. And just hearing what they go through, what they're focused on, right, this feels like the big solve to me.
Right.
How do you get politics at a local level highly functioning?
Right.
And then hopefully it feeds its way up the
system. So Nextdoor is an app.
Yep.
So how much does it cost?
It's free.
And so advertising, it allows you guys to make a profit and
yes.
make a living. So do you feel as though your competition, like, for example, in my town, there's Massapequa Moms.
Mm-hmm.
So we had some furniture we had to sell. They go, oh, if you want to sell it, just go on Massapequa Moms. They'll go pick it up. So is that your competition? So it is happening on other platforms.
It is to some extent, although broadly, if you look across the U.S., Nextdoor is far in the lead. So to your point about selling things locally, I was just talking to someone about those trade-offs of put it on Nextdoor versus put it on other platforms. And what they were saying is just the leads on Nextdoor are much better. People do interesting things for their neighbors.
Right.
So I see in my Nextdoor feed, people will offer Warriors tickets at face value because they want their neighbor to go enjoy it because they can't make it, versus if they put it on a StubHub, right, they put a premium on it. So, or, you know, a bunch of ski clothes.
And you want your neighbor to owe
right
you a favor.
Exactly.
Right.
You're filling the bucket, right?
See, my problem is, which has really worked for me, is because I'm not handy, and almost everybody is more handy than me.
You're made for our platform.
Yeah, so I could be the needy guy in the neighborhood.
You are perfect.
The neighborhood could rally against my presence on Nextdoor and ask me to leave it. Has that been done before?
No, we try to make sure that sort of behavior gets a little tapped down. And that goes back to leads. You know those folks that planted the flag?
Yeah.
They also act as moderators in the community, and we give them some tools to just help them say, hey, folks, maybe it's time to take this offline.
Right. And would you say this? There's a famous story in Brooklyn, where everyone's from Brooklyn, where they say that you could hear the Dodger games just by walking home because everyone had the radio on as they walked back. If you got out of line those days, other neighbors would discipline you.
Yeah.
They knew the cops. The cops knew the families. They knew the brothers and the sisters.
Yeah.
So we've lost that. People got more privacy.
It's true, and it's you know, it goes back to that point about that middle ring that David Brooks, Mark Dunkelman have all written about, is that we're missing that. And, you know, I think it's such a loss to ourselves.
Right.
I mean, there's a great line about in a more connected world, people have never been more lonely. And so how do we help people take that first step? Because you can't do that on a platform like Facebook, because the people I'm interacting with probably live all over the world. On Nextdoor, they literally live down the street.
All right, so you were saying about someone actually got a liver?
Yeah, they did. I mean, we see it all. I mean, it's extreme. Like, one woman actually gave her liver to a neighbor that she didn't know before, gave a piece of it to make them both healthy. We've seen people do things like a donut store down in Southern California where his wife was ill, and now he sells that every morning by about 6:37 so he can get back to his wife. And that's the neighbors coming together.
You also talked about foster kids. This other program where foster kids get bicycles.
Yeah,
get bicycles. So
isn't that cool?
How many times do your kids get older? Like, my kids are barely riding bikes now. Two of them has licenses.
Yeah.
And I would love to give it away.
And no, these are just the moments of, like, these little kind of start small moments. I think it's like walking down the street and throwing a newspaper up onto someone's step or closing a gate so a dog doesn't run out. Like, we just need more of those small moments of kindness that I think keep adding back to your community.
So whether it's a fire, hurricanes, it seems to work.
Oh, emergency response. Like, you know, the public agencies, we have over 5,000 on the platform now. When they need to get to people in time of emergency, like we just lived the fires in California, that was how they were getting the people to say, here's an evacuation route. But even after the fact, what I see then is neighbors saying, hey, I'm driving to Chico tomorrow, which is close to where the fires happened. I've got a truck sitting in my backyard. If you have sheets, if you have tents, if you have, you know, whatever people might need, throw them in the back and I'll just drive it up. And you don't even need to knock on my door, just pop it in the truck.
And lastly, Sarah, if people listening right now, they might be saying, you know what, I am lonely or I want to connect it. I just moved into my neighborhood, just got divorced, have to start a brand new life. So there, you're saying that more than likely, you're confident that if they go on Nextdoor, that their neighborhood is going to be on.
Nextdoor. I'm sure that their neighborhood is on there right now. And I think they'll find, you know, either a small connection, maybe someone they even recognize. We have a directory, so you can actually see what's the name of that neighbor that I keep passing. Now I can actually use their name. The loneliness point, we did a campaign all through Europe where we got people to sign up for an hour or two a week to go knock on the door of an elderly neighbor and make sure they were doing okay coming up to the holidays. It is easy when you start, but I think people really get stuck on what's the start point, and we think that's what Nextdoor does for you.
So download it for free. Go to the App Store.
Absolutely. Thank you.
We're trying to get everybody to do that with Fox Nation, so go there at the same time.
Exactly.
Hey, Sarah Fry, congratulations on all your success. CEO of Nextdoor, helping your neighborhood get to know each other, one family at a time.
Really appreciate it.
Thanks, Sarah.
Thanks,
Mike. We'll come back with your calls, 1-866-408-7669. Brian Kilmeade Show.
Coming to you on a need-to-know basis, because, man, do you need to know. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
You owe over $10,000 in back taxes. You've called every tax firm out there. They all say the same thing, making promises they never keep. And you're sick of it. What you really need is a new start on your back taxes. If you're faced with garnishments, levies, audits, or years of unfiled tax returns, we'll fight to get you the new start you deserve. Call 1-800-312-9970. Our New Start program could stop collection efforts, remove any liens the IRS has in place, and help you reduce your back taxes by as much as 80%. That's right, 80%. Don't wait until another tax season ends and another year of penalties and interest are added to your balance. If you owe at least $10,000 to the IRS and need a new start on your back taxes, call 1-800-312-9970. That's 1-800-312-9970. Let the professionals at Coast One Financial Group fight to get you the new start you deserve. Again, that's 1-800-312-9970.
Spring showers bring more than flowers. They also bring that familiar musty smell to your basement, usually caused by too much moisture, molds, and mildew. Don't bother with a dehumidifier. It just circulates the same unhealthy air. Now there's a better way to remove damp, musty air and harmful pollutants. It's with the Wave Moisture Control Unit. Wave can transform your home into a drier, healthier environment. Satisfaction guaranteed. For more information, visit dryhome123.com. That's dryhome123.com.
Are you looking for senior care for your mom or dad but don't know where to start? Hi, I'm Joan London with A Place for Mom. Nobody knows your parent or loved one better than you, and nobody knows senior living better than the experts at A Place for Mom. It's a free service, and we've helped thousands of families find the right place for their mom or dad. There's a place for answers, A Place for Mom. Call today.
Call A Place for Mom at 1-800-379-1174. That's 1-800-379-1174.
Hey, it's Flint Lockwood here from Swallow Falls. My friends and I have just discovered these amazing living foodimals. But wait, we've also discovered a crisis that needs our help. According to my calculations, 1 in 5 kids in America struggles with hunger. That's almost 17 million kids. Our mission is to help solve hunger by teaming up with the Feeding America Network to get food to kids facing hunger in communities across the country.
Feeding America is a nationwide network of food banks, helping connect children and families who face hunger to billions of pounds of food, reaching shelters, schools, and community centers in every county in America, including yours. Help Flint and the Feeding America network of food banks get food to the people who need it in your community. Find your local Feeding America food bank at feedingamerica.org/hunger.
Together, we're Feeding America.
A message from Feeding America and the Ad Council.
Hey, is that a faucet running?
Nope, that's not a faucet. That's a river rushing through the forest.
It is?
Yeah, forest rivers provide over 100 million people with clean water to drink. The water comes straight from the forest to us, in fact.
What? I can't hear you because of the vacuum.
That's not a vacuum. That's the trees in the forest cleaning up the air we breathe.
How do trees clean the air?
They soak up the dirty air on their leaves, branches, and trunks, which means clean air for us.
Hmm, cool. I didn't know that.
Yep, but the forest does more than give us clean air and water. It gives us shade for hot days, birds to listen to, and trees to climb.
Wow, that's awesome. I didn't know how cool the forest could be. Hey, let's go explore some more.
Visit the forest today and enjoy all it does, just for you. To learn more about the forest and find one near you, go to discovertheforest.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service and the Ad Council.
News, unique opinions. Hear it all on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
You know, I get a lot of personal emails. You go to BrianKilmeade.com, you can write me personally, and a lot of them really apply. So after I did the show last night, Battle at the Border, I was lucky enough to host, people brought up that we need legal immigration because we need laborers. We're at almost zero unemployment. And I got this. It says, I farm in Iowa, this is from Terry, and have a seed corn plant 4 miles from me. They use mostly Mexican workers to do the process of pulling the tassels off the trees when they needed to sterilize them. A farmer in our community hires the hundreds of these Mexicans each year. He has them come in on a special work visa. He uses these people in several different states. They have a date, then they must be coming when they have to come, and they have a date when they have to return. He's required to make certain that they are physically on the plane and return back to Mexico. So it can work. Nobody's anti-Central and South American. They just want it orderly. At least I believe that. Now let's find out if there's more I need to know.
More to know.
Well, Tom Brady gave an interview before he left in front of, first he addressed 34,000 screaming Patriots fan, and then he goes out for his 8th Super Bowl. And he knows people are saying at 41 years old, Tom, if you win, will you retire? 44.
Is there any chance that this is your last game? Zero.
Zero.
Say it. I don't want to just say it.
Zero, yeah. Okay.
He says, I feel like I'm asked that a lot. I keep repeating the answer. I've set a goal for myself to play at 45. As you know, the Patriots love pretending as if everybody's against them, like everybody wanted Kansas City in and nobody wanted the Patriots out. Now they're beginning to thrive on that. But let's move on. You're going to have to help me swoosh. We're going to be swooshless? How dare we? All right, the 25th Screen Actors Award, Guild Awards were handed out yesterday. Best Film, Outstanding Performance by a Male Actor. Rami Malek, oh yeah, he was great in Bohemian Rhapsody. Outstanding performance by a female actor in a leading role, Glenn Close. Now, who cares about that? I want to find out if anyone talked politics. First, the most bizarre quote of the acceptance awards. Mike Myers talked about getting a SAG award and how being in the arts and getting it financed by Canada changed his life.
What I'm about to tell you is a true story. I was born in Canada, a country that heavily subsidizes their arts. When I was 17, the Canadian government had me fill out a vocational training test to see what it is that I should do for a living once I graduated high school. I sent it to Ottawa, and 2 weeks later, the Canadian government determined that I should be a movie star. Absolutely true. I am the specter of big government. My name is Mike Myers. And I am an actor.
Well, by the way, we all took those tests in school. Mine said broadcaster, and I don't need to believe in big government. But I guess that's his point. We should all move to Canada? Why'd you come here to get famous then? Jeff Owens really is the spirit of being a successful actor or person in America. Listen to his story.
So somewhere in the middle of the road of my life, I found myself in the dark wood of unemployment and debt. But instead of switching careers like a sane person, I took a job at a local Trader Joe's to see if I could hang in there with my career. And it's actually worked out pretty well. I'm Jeffrey Owens and I am an actor.
See, that's what it takes. That's why I thought actors always would be natural conservatives. And finally, a man finds an authentic World War II hand grenade while magnet fishing in Florida. The unidentified individual found the item while magnet fishing in Akawaka State, I guess. He put it in his trunk and drove it to a Taco Bell prior to calling 911.
So the best part of that, Brian, is that he found it, put it in the car, went to Taco Bell, got his Taco Bell, called 911. They had to shut down the Taco Bell while they, you know, disengage the grenade. He stopped everyone from enjoying the Taco Bell.
Why would you take a grenade with you anyway? Doesn't grenades always look like grenades?
Yeah, good question. Wouldn't you call 911 as soon as you found it?
Promise all our listeners, if you find a grenade, don't put it in your car and go to a Taco Bell, please. If there's something we all can learn from that, it could be this. All right, thanks so much for listening. Go to BrianKilmeadShow.com or to the podcast. The first hour is free.
You owe over $10,000 in back taxes. You've called every tax firm out there. They all say the same thing, making promises they never keep. And you're sick of it. What you really need is a new start on your back taxes. If you're faced with garnishments, levies, audits, or years of unfiled tax returns, we'll fight to get you the new start you deserve. Call 1-800-312-9970. Our New Start program could stop collection efforts, remove any liens the IRS has in place, and help you reduce your back taxes by as much as 80%. That's right, 80%. Don't wait until another tax season ends and another year of penalties and interest are added to your balance. If you owe at least $10,000 to the IRS and need a new start on your back taxes, call 1-800-312-9970. That's 1-800-312-9970. Let the professionals at Coast One Financial Group fight to get you the new start you deserve. Again, that's 1-800-312-9970.
Now, from the historical audio archives of Fox News Talk.
Heavy snow fell in Washington, D.C. the night before John F. Kennedy's inauguration, but thoughts of canceling the plans were overruled. On January 20th, 1961, he stood in the bitter cold on the steps of the Capitol and before a crowd of 20,000 was sworn in as the 35th President of the United States.
The energy, the faith, the devotion which we bring to this endeavor will light our country and all who serve it. And the glow from that fire can truly light the world. And so, my fellow Americans, ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country.
Stay tuned to hear more history as it unfolds before your ears. It's the audio archives of Fox News Talk.